Everybody, welcome to a special episode of Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host Jonathan Metz, and with me as always are James Jones,
yeah,
and John Lindemann.
I'm here again,
and special guest Michael TYP Cole,
guest and chauffeur. Thank you very much.
Yes, yeah. Mike's been driving us around all week. We are live and in person at John Lindemann's new home in Central California, S to the B.
More south than central, but
yeah, south central
really
California.
It's more south central.
South central. Yeah. So it's the day after E3, and we have driven up to visit John. He wasn't able to come to the show, unfortunately, because he just recently moved. Hopefully next year. Hopefully by now, most of you have heard the home team episode that John recorded with Guillaume and Greg last night. James and 2IP and I have not heard that yet.
Nope.
So we're relying on John to keep us from being redundant with that, but I don't think that'll be too much of a problem. So we're going to talk about stuff we played at E3. We're going to get some questions from John, and he's going to be our sounding board. We're going to have some good times and shenanigans, and just have a good old live version of RFN, since we're taking the opportunity, since we were already in California.
Yeah, I mean, we have no alcohol, but there's a liquor store, I think, just up the street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're all pretty drowsy from... We had a nice walk around Santa Barbara, and it was beautiful and nice and sunny and had some ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's the afternoon, and we're all like... Nah.
Yeah, we're all in coma.
But, and we're kind of tired from the week of E3.
Yeah,
but
I think it was a great plan to walk around so much right after E3.
Yeah, I think
we're thinking about that as we're walking around. I'm like, that's a great
idea. Take a nice walk.
Actually, yeah. I mean, it was nice to get the sunshine, though, because that's one thing you really don't get at E3.
That's true.
So, anyway, we're going to talk about games. I thought we might start off with talking about getting into some E3 impressions that we haven't done extensive videos about. James, I hope everybody has seen those. James hosted some videos this week and got them up with Jared Rosenberg's help. And we featured most or all of the people on the staff who were at the show this year.
Yeah.
I think got on a video. So you can see everybody's faces and hear their voices and hear us talk about various topics. So we covered some things like Splatoon. We covered
Smash Brothers for the Wii U.
So, yeah, well, we covered some.
We talked about 3DS version.
We talked about 3DS and the tournament and the roundtable. Talked about Codename Steam. So we're going to mostly skip that stuff here and talk about maybe some games that we haven't covered in those videos. And I thought we'd start off with Smash Brothers for Wii U because, John, I don't know if this was your impression watching it from home this year, but Smash Brothers was the game for Nintendo at E3. It was a huge deal.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, from what I heard, it dominated their booth, and it was pretty much what they were pinning all their E3 hopes on.
It didn't just dominate in terms of number of systems. There were huge crowds consistently. I mean, to be expected. I mean, if you were there for the Melee year, it was kind of the same situation. Maybe they didn't have as many kiosks. They didn't realize how huge it was going to be.
That was a long time
ago. Yeah, well, I'm dating myself. Whatever.
Yeah.
But I think we figured out it was like 13th E3. Well,
and the funny thing is, I mean, it was a little hard to predict how it was going to be received because Brawl was never playable at E3.
Yeah.
It was shown at a round table. We did not get to play it. That was after the show. It was actually like a surprise game. You know, a lot of people were like, I thought you guys were going to show Smash Brothers, and they didn't at the press conference.
Right.
And then at the end of the day, they brought Sakurai and they showed Brawl for the first time. And then that game came out in April or May the next year before the next E3. Mm-hmm. So it was never playable at E3. So it's been 13 years since Nintendo showed a Smash Brothers at E3. And
let alone two of them.
Right. Yeah. And I guess I shouldn't be surprised that it was popular, but it really was. There were always a ton of people there. We played it a bunch of times.
Oh,
and
yeah.
In a lot of ways, it's an ideal E3 game because you can play it quickly. You get a satisfying experience out of even 5 minutes with the game. You can play four people at a time. So even though there were a lot of people around it, you never had to wait that long for a chance to play it because they were bringing up four people at a time. And I hope people who had to go to Best Buy aren't mad at me right now because I've heard the wait times were horrendous at those events. But at E3, it really wasn't that bad. If you want to play Smash Brothers, especially the 3DS version, there was never a wait. you know.
Yeah, you never remember.
It was maybe one round.
But now, why was that?
Well, I don't think people care as much about the 3DS game. Yeah. And having played both of them, now I don't care as much about the 3DS game.
It's not bad. Yeah. It just it doesn't have the same epicness. And the control scheme they had on display was not... I think most people that tried it felt like they should have had the default be different. Like they had A's as the smash attack, where when your thumb rests on a 3DS, it almost feels like the B should be the main... button.
Right.
Now, was it on the normal 3DS or 3DS XL?
XL's. That's all to behind the
So I just wonder. I wonder with some of the stuff that you said about it, if it's being played on a 3DS XL, and you're saying that there's still kind of problems with zooming out and small characters.
Yeah.
How would that be on a normal size?
Horrible.
Not great.
I mean, I really do feel like the game feels cramped on the 3DS screen.
It does.
Some of the stages when they zoom out, it becomes a real problem identifying which character is yours, which are the other characters, what is ever. There's all these intricate animations, but they're so tiny on the screen, you can't really tell.
Yeah.
It may be something that you get better at over time as a skill, but I found it difficult to adjust to. I thought it controlled okay. It ran really well. It was smooth.
Yeah.
The art style is nice. I don't have a problem with it. I just feel like there's something about it that feels kind of functional, and it's not as exciting to play it on the 3DS version. A lot of Smash Brothers it's exciting.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, the spectacle of it.
It's exuberant. It's like the fireworks of video games. Like things are just exploding and flashing and moving really fast all over the screen all the time. And there's something about the 3DS version that just doesn't quite capture that feel.
Yeah.
And it is Smash Brothers, but it's lacking something. And I'll be curious to see if they can address that before the final game comes out. I'm sure they got some feedback to that effect. And if you looked at them, I mean, there was no question the Wii U version was way more popular at E3. What people just did not want to play the 3DS version in comparison.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think there was a T-shirt aspect too. You don't get a T-shirt if you win the future.
Sure.
That was part of it.
That may be a motivator for. Well, I thought it was an ugly T-shirt.
At the Wii U kiosks, I guess. How much of that was people kind of standing around watching other people play?
No, I think most people wanted to play.
Really?
Yeah, I really do.
But I'm just saying, though, was it because the 3DS stuff, it was not really fun to watch because... You can't watch it well.
They have a screen up there, but they blow it up.
Yeah.
It's kind of fugglier because they have that skewed, I don't know, scaled ugly
version of it. If it's less of a kind of a spectator element to it. So
there's some of that. There was also like a giant projected screen in the booth, and they had a special demo station that you had to wait in a longer line for, but if you wanted to play on the big screen, you could get in this line and you would kind of go up on these risers and you would stand up there. It was a little bit, if you remember, John, way back when they were showing off the Wave Bird for the first time with Mario Party, this would have been 2002 with the Wave Bird, and they had this kind of like almost like a stadium, like bleachers set up, and you would go up there and play from way up there, and so it was kind of a similar setup. And one thing I noticed looking up there on the big screen, I didn't spend a whole lot of time staring around watching
the big screen version.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Did you notice that the game just looked really awesome up on the big? Like, there's something I guess it's because it's in HD.
Yeah.
It survives being blown up that big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it really looked great, and I thought, you know, maybe that leads into the tournament thing and having that up on giant screens up in the Nokia Theater.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something that maybe a lot of other Nintendo games before this generation really wouldn't have looked that
great.
They would not have showing them up on a big screen like that. But now they can do that. Now they can really present and exhibit their games in a different way. And that's just not something that we've seen a lot from Nintendo in the past. So it was interesting to see them show it that way. But you know, I played Smash Brothers on Wii U many times at the show. I think all of us did. Everybody really loved it. I didn't really hear anything bad about it. And James, I haven't talked to you about it much. And I don't really think of you as being like a huge Smash Brothers fan, but I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on this version of the game.
It is a totally functional and Smash Brothers game that captures pretty much everything that you want that series to have.
Yeah.
I mean, no, it's not my series, but it has everything Smash Brothers needs in order to be considered a good Smash Brothers game.
Yeah. I mean, there was a huge buzz around it too. I mean, it was obvious that they were going above and beyond with the tournament and all that kind of stuff to really push it out there and create a buzz around it for the entire show.
And this is a game they announced 3 years ago, yeah. So it's been a long time coming.
Yep.
And I gotta say, it really, I think, lived up to and exceeded my expectations.
It's a lot of fun.
It felt, to me, it sort of took me back to the days of Melee. It felt better than Brawl to me. It felt more like it had a little more speed for Melee. It had a little more smoothness to it. The weight of the characters felt a little better. Mm-hmm. And I just felt like I was having more fun playing with my friends. And I enjoyed Brawl, but it never quite clicked with me. And I felt, even in the brief period of time that we had to play it here at E3, I think I already like this game better than Brawl. And that makes me really excited to spend even more time with it, see all the other characters and levels that we haven't seen yet. So, and I'm really curious/dreading the online mode to see how that turns out. Yeah. I tried to get something out of Sakurai about it. And
yeah, no dice.
Yeah, he basically dodged the question. But I do think, I mean, based on stuff like Kid Icarus and Mario Kart 8, I mean, I do think they've gotten better. I don't think it'll be great. And I think he does have a point. His answer in the roundtable was, look, we can't do some of the tricks that first-person shooters and racing games do to try to make your experience appear smoother than it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do that in a fighting game. Everybody has to be updated simultaneously, especially when you have four players. It's even harder than with two players. And I appreciate that. I'm sure it is more difficult. But if you're going to make your game online, it has to work online.
Yeah, it does.
Sorry, there's no excuses. Yeah. If you can't pull it off, don't make an online game.
Yep.
And that's what they did with Brawl, is they made it online and it was broken and horrible.
Yeah.
So they've got to do everything that they can. I mean, yes, some things are out of their control, but they've got to do everything within their control. They've got to do, it's got to be the best online game they've ever made.
So Johnny, before we move off this, were there any particular characters or levels that you thought stood out? Because for me, none of the levels really stood out in the Wii U version. There were
only like five on display. I mean, the Mega Man one looks, the background looks amazing. I don't know that actually, I don't even think I ever got to play on the Mega Man.
It looks nice. It's not a super special level.
I mean, the Yellow Devil comes in. He takes up a lot of
stage. He takes up a lot of real estate.
Like, he's really, like, you can't ignore him.
Yeah.
He's up in your face. You're going to have to deal with him one way or another. You can kill him. Yeah. You can try to avoid him, but he moves around and he shoots. So he's a big factor.
Now, I've heard the backgrounds are toned down a little bit from previous games. Is that true?
Toned down in what way?
Not as much going on in the background.
Huh.
Like, I didn't notice that, but I was playing the game mostly. I think
maybe to an extent. It's not stuff like like Annette from from Melee, where there's just the town and stuff's going on behind you.
Yeah.
There's a little bit less of that. Just doesn't really affect the game. It's just stuff happening in the background. But that may just be the levels they were showing off too.
Right, yeah. I mean, you can imagine we saw kind of a small fraction of the levels in the game. So it's hard to say. I mean, one of my favorites was the Pilot Wings level.
Oh yeah.
And you're fighting
you're fighting on the plane, right?
Right. You're fighting on planes. There's actually a couple planes and it switches you, it drops you off of one onto another one at certain points. But my favorite thing, just on the subject of the backgrounds, is I love how at one point you're flying over the original Pilot Wings island, which looks like a kind of a very sharp version of the Mode 7 graphics, and all that's like underneath you, and it's flat, but it looks better actually than it did on Super Nintendo, but like it looks like a Super Nintendo game basically.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And that's like one island, and then you fly over the ocean, and now you get onto Woohoo Island where Pilot Wings Resort took place, and that looks basically like you would expect it to from those games. And I'm TYP and I were talking, I hope they don't leave out the N64 island, because there's some kind of recognizable stuff there too. They did that weird version of America.
Yeah.
It was like really small version of the United States.
Nessie.
And
the Mount Rushmore with Mario's face.
Exactly.
And
like I think it would be a missed opportunity if they don't have that stuff in there too. But anyway, I like the concept of that level and it was fun to do. So
On the 3DS, I liked the new Super Mario Brothers 2 level, because it may not be clear if you're looking at videos. Basically, they had coins everywhere, as you would expect.
Oh, I didn't play that one.
Yeah, yeah.
And when you get to, there's a little coin meter on the top left of your screen.
Oh, really?
And when you get to 100, you become gold, whatever your character is. Which makes you, I guess, more powerful or maybe hard to hit off.
That's pretty sweet.
I'm not sure. That lasts maybe 10 seconds or whatever. So that was a really cool, unique thing about that level. I'm hoping we'll see more of that in both the Wii U and the 3DS
version.
And it sounds like they're really, because, I mean, there's the Yellow Devil in the Mega Man one. So I'm hoping there'll be quirky, unique things for other levels like that.
Yeah, and of course the two versions have totally different sets of levels.
Yeah.
It did seem like most of the... I didn't get to play that one, the one you're talking about, unfortunately, but I think most of the levels in the 3DS game appear to be taken from handheld games.
Correct.
That's
there
the
was
idea.
The Farrox Arena from Fire Emblem Awakenings. There was the train level from Zelda Spirit Tracks. Etc.
Yeah.
So that seems like a good idea to me. I mean, that way they have lots of material to draw on. It'll be different than the stuff that's in the Wii U game.
Yeah.
So I think that's smart. In terms of characters, I played Mega Man once or twice. Didn't quite get the hang of him. He's definitely a projectile character, kind of like Samus.
Mm-hmm.
He's fairly fast.
Yeah.
But he didn't seem to pack a real big punch. I'm looking for what are the moves that I can rely on to knock somebody out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I didn't really find that with him. Not to say he doesn't have them, but you're going in there pretty blind, you know, with a demo like this. There's a lot of characters. I want to try them all.
Yeah.
I don't have the luxury of playing with the same one 18 times to really get the feel of it because I'm trying to try as many of them as I can.
Like,
so a lot
how
of
is his charge move with a Mega Buster?
That is fun because that's his smash. So when you use his normal attack, he just shoots out the pellets.
Okay.
And then when you do a smash and you hold it and you charge the smash, that's him charging up the Mega Buster.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I had some trouble figuring that particular character out. But, I mean, I think we had... I used Wii Fit Trainer, which is...
She reminds me of Zelda in Melee
Overall.
It's not
a good character. It's got issues right now.
I think she needs to be rebalanced a little bit. I mean, she's okay in four-player because she's good for, like, hanging out on the side.
Yeah.
She has great recovery. Mm-hmm. You know, she's very huge jumps. You know, like, and she has a lot of projectile attacks that you can sort of launch into the fray.
Yeah, she hits a medicine ball at you or something like that. No, it's a volleyball.
I think it's a volleyball.
She spikes a volleyball at people as her attack.
What's her push-up attack? That was something.
Her push-up attack is like a bunch of hula hoops, and she goes flying into the air.
Yeah. And
I never got that character.
And there's another one where she's doing the yogic breathing, and I didn't understand what that actually
did. They said it powers her up. Every time you do it, she gets a little bit stronger.
Oh, okay. It's not real clear on the screen.
I didn't perceive that was the case, but I'll take their word for it.
Yeah, sure.
Has a real reach problem, though, and a speed problem. So.
I'd say Greninja reminds me a little bit of Sonic. He might be a little more powerful than that. He's not quite as squirrely, but...
His jumps are real...
Yeah, he's very mobile to the point that it's a little hard to control him, I think.
Yeah.
It's easy to see that some people are probably going to get really good with him. Little Mac, I thought, was really fun to use.
He was owning a lot.
He's kind of like a faster version of Donkey Kong, I think. Like, Donkey Kong sucks in the air also.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
but on the ground, he's really powerful. But the problem with Donkey Kong is he's slow, so you have to be really good with the timing.
It's
you
also
have
a huge target.
You have to anticipate stuff. Yeah, Little Mac is fun. He's low. He's a lot shorter than some of the characters. And he's pretty fast. His attacks are really fast, and he can move. He's also a little bit like Captain Falcon in that he can move across the stage laterally really fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really had trouble fighting Little Mac when Neil was playing. He got really good with him. I was sort of hit and miss when I was playing. Sometimes I was really on, sometimes I wasn't. Yeah. You know, part of, like he says, you're trying all the different characters, but he seems like he's going to be easily in a favorite when this thing comes out.
Yeah.
And
Neil says that he's really useless if you happen to fight on a level that has a lot of
I really do think it'll be level by level. Yeah.
Now, have they changed anything with Mr. Game & Watch?
He wasn't in the demo. He's actually, at this point, not confirmed to be in the game, although he was shown in the round table.
They teased him in the Pac-Man intro video.
Yeah, there's a moment where he compares birthdays with Pac-Man. So I thought that was strange for them to do that if he's not in the game.
Yeah,
so I'm hopeful that he'll show up.
Yeah.
And then, one character, I didn't spend a lot of time with the returning characters. I was more interested in trying, I had limited time, so I wanted to try the new ones. But, I did, play several rounds with Zero Suit Samus, who's kind of a new character, right?
I like her a lot more.
She's now her own character, and they have beefed her up a lot.
Yeah.
She is way more powerful than in Brawl. Way more. So, and she's still fast, she's still got a lot of recovery, but she hits a lot harder. They're probably going to tone her down a little bit, I'm guessing, before the game comes out.
I would think so, because in my match, in my Wii Fit Trainer Zero Suit Samus match, that was not great.
Yeah. But, all things considered, the game being at least 6 months out, from release. It felt pretty balanced, not perfect, but pretty balanced considering mm-hmm. they had, you know, a lot of characters available, not a ton of stages, but, you know, several.
That's probably the last thing that they would work on, stages, really.
Yeah, a lot of items.
Actually, can we speak about an item real quick?
Yeah.
I'm enjoying the items, not just because I think they're the right way to play the game, but because we've had these really insane ones added in this game. And I think the one that a lot of us appreciated is the blue shell. Which we hate in Mario Kart because it goes after whoever's in the lead. But in this game, you pick it up and you throw it, and it stops midair and then goes and hovers over the person currently leading the match and KOs them.
And that it doesn't KO you, it just slams down on you.
Every
really
time
hard.
I saw it, it just happened to KO people.
Okay.
And it also
it does a lot of damage.
Well, it'll probably be late in the match, likely, right?
Yes. And it also happens that even if you
of
are...
Of course it would be late in the match.
Even if you are the person who is in the lead, it will still hit you.
Yeah, like if you throw it, it might come back and hit you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how often did that spawn?
I didn't see it that often. I saw it about 4 or 5 times.
Really?
Yeah, it's not super rare, but it's not...
They had things turned up way high in this demo.
Yeah, Smash Balls.
I would not see everything, right?
Yeah. Smash Balls
were everywhere.
Yeah.
So, that's pretty great.
It's now, true.
What controllers did they have?
GameCube.
Interesting.
I
played with the gamepad, yes.
Yeah, that was only upstairs in the VIP area.
I mean, we could have done it, but they just weren't doing it. Yeah. Okay. Nobody was asking to do it, but I later found out we could have asked all along and they'd been okay with it.
The funny thing was, all the times I went up there, I never heard anyone in the audience, anyone who was going up to demo the game, you know, from who could be Joe Blow, who just happened to get into E3, you know, I mean, this is an open booth, there's a lot of people there. Never heard anyone ever say, oh, that's weird, that's a GameCube controller, or, oh man, we get to play with game. It seemed expected. Like, it just seemed like no one really seemed to think it was weird that they were showing this Wii U game, which has Wii U in the title of the game.
Yes.
With a GameCube controller. I will say, it played really well with the GameCube controller. It's been a while since I've played GameCube at E3, and it felt good. These were the silver ones, and they felt new. I don't know if they just have a stockpile of them or something. It didn't feel like they had dredged them out of...
This was probably... They're releasing new GameCube controllers with that USB adapter.
The ones they're releasing, I think, are the black ones with the Smash Brothers logo.
Oh.
That was shown in that video.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
These silver ones, I think they're probably just the standard ones Nintendo has for demo, but they probably haven't used them in years.
Yeah.
So
yeah, they probably have them in a warehouse.
It was crazy, but they had a bunch of them at E3.
Felt fine to me.
Yeah, and they felt really good. So, I mean, if you love playing with the GameCube, I was interested to play it with maybe the Pro Controller, which is probably what I'll use most of the time, especially because it is wireless. Like, I'd like that.
Yep.
Right.
And I'd be curious to see how it feels with that, but they didn't have those available. So.
I mean, the gamepad felt fine. The buttons, obviously, are not the same as the GameCube controller, but I didn't play Smash Brothers Brawl with the GameCube controller anyway, so that was fine.
I didn't either, yeah. So, I used a classic.
Yeah. So for me, that was okay. I managed just fine. And I'm sure they're all remappable, so it's not a big deal.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, we spent a lot of time on Smash Brothers for good reason. It was, like, took up half the booth at E3 for Nintendo. And it was the game that I played the most. I think it was the game that most people played the most. And it was a great game to go back to over and over, because a lot of the other demos are, like, very finite experiences. You play through the demo and you've basically seen it all. Maybe there's another level you can go back and try later. But with Smash Brothers, it's always different.
Yep.
And there's way more than anybody's going to be able to experience just in this one show. I mean, it was a huge demo. There was just a lot of content available. And if you're lucky, you at least get to see other people do all of it. But you're not going to get to try every character and every level and every combination. So, and a lot of the items are random. So it just felt like every time we went back, there was something new to see, and there was a new experience, a new little tidbit of information you'd pull out of it. And so I was really motivated to just keep going back and playing it, and it was fun. Yep. I wanted to go back and play it as many times as possible. It really did, like, rekindle my excitement and my love for Smash Brothers, I couldn't be happier about that. So I'm glad they focused on it.
Yeah, I think the only complaint I heard was that they didn't put Pac-Man in after the roundtable.
Which even the Nintendo staff was like, we
could do that.
It'd be nice, but that'd have to be a different build.
Well, so actually, on that point, they were pushing builds all week to those machines.
Now, did they say anything about DLC? Any plans for DLC?
No.
They did not.
No.
All they talked about was Amiibo, which...
Yeah.
Is not DLC,
it's
thankfully.
It's not, no.
Thankfully.
Yeah, now, did they ever have any hands-on stuff with the Amiibo figures?
No. They were behind glass the whole show.
And they looked really good, right?
They were detailed,
yes.
Yeah.
You know, I'm happy with the way they're implementing it in Smash Brothers because I don't plan on buying these things, and it's not going to detract from my experience if I don't use these. I wonder if you are really into these figures. I don't know if you're satisfied with the implementation here because it does seem so auxiliary.
Well, I think they're the fact that these figures will work with every game that comes out from this point forward that supports them. I think that you don't have to have any one game that really uses them in an outstanding way. I think it becomes the collective. So I went back.
That's smart. It makes it less offensive to me as someone who doesn't want to have to deal with that.
I went back and watched part of the press conference, part of the video today, the Digital Direct, and noticed that when they were talking about the Amiibo, they mentioned Mario Kart 7 by name, but they also throw up the logo for Yoshi's Woolly World. They throw up the logo for
Mario Party 10.
Mario Party 10. They throw it up for Captain Toad.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so there are quite a few games coming that will support this thing.
Retroactively. They're going to patch in support after the game comes
and
out.
They didn't mention their plans for the 3DS games that will support it, just that they're having an adapter come out. So, I mean, you could conceivably get a lot of play, even if the play you get from individual games isn't that intense.
So it looks like each figurine will have some sort of serial number, and each game will be programmed to react to that serial number.
Whatever. Yeah.
So I mean,
it has storage capacity on the actual.
The idea is that as you fight amiibos, they get stronger in this game. You can customize their movesets. They develop strategies. If you can have two amiibos fight each other just for fun, and it allows you to create a situation where these things become incredibly powerful. And the example they gave was, you can create an amiibo that is so incredibly powerful that it is difficult to defeat.
Yeah, great. Mm.
It's like awesome for balance.
It's like one of those Dark Sims, the Perfect Dark.
Yeah.
You can create
which people
your own Dark
do
Sim.
Like that stuff. So.
I used to fight Dark Sims on my own.
I know people who love to fight against the computer in Smash Brothers. I know people who love to crank up, you know, do like 3 versus 1 and turn the CPUs all up to level 9 and try to survive in Smash Brothers. It's like, hey, I mean, yeah, if that's what you're into, I'm totally fine with Amiibo being part of that formula because it really doesn't affect my experience.
I like the idea of creating two incredibly, incredibly powerful Amiibo and just having them fight each other, though.
It might be kind of interesting,
just to see what they do to one another.
Right. You might learn something from the way they fight that you could use.
I'll be curious how that all works, but I mean, it's not a huge part of the game.
No, it's a bonus to a bonus feature, basically. So, anyway, let's move on and talk about other games. You brought up Captain Toad, that's a game we have not talked about on any of the videos or podcasts so far. John, I'm curious, I don't know what you guys said about it last night, but what are your thoughts on Captain Toad? Is it you haven't played 3D World
yet.
Well, that's
the whole thing. It's like I haven't played 3D World yet, so the Captain Toad levels are kind of a mystery to me, but from what I understand, they're sort of side levels that are kind of, that have puzzle-solving elements, right?
Yeah, and they're, like, everybody pretty much loves them. Like, they're really they're very different than the rest of the game, but they feel like a lot of thought was put into them. And I would say this full game coming out at the end of this year, it really, it holds that tradition. Like, the levels they had on display, there were 4, I played all 4 of them. And they felt that they had put just as much care into them. And when I use those words intentionally because these are very three-dimensional levels. They're almost like puzzle boxes that you're walking around.
Yes.
Yep.
And in order to complete them and to perform well on them, you have to move the camera because they play with perspective a lot. So you'll go up a staircase and around a corner and now you can't see Toad anymore. And so you have to move the camera around, but also they use the camera angle to hide things. A lot of secrets are kind of hidden behind things, and so they encourage you to sort of move the camera all the time to really get a thorough look all around you. And as you move through the level, you want to continually move the camera because now things that were hidden before now become revealed.
Yeah.
So they really seem to put a lot of thought into the layout of these levels.
It reminded me a little bit, and it's better than it, but it reminded me a little bit of like the green stars they hid in
Galaxy 2. It's a similar idea.
Or where they're hidden off in a corner where you gotta look in a special way to find it.
Right.
So
I'm curious, you know, I would guess they intended to make this game a while ago because this game's coming out this year. They didn't wait till after 3D World came out. They decided to start making it.
Maybe they did. I don't know.
That'd be a real fast turnaround.
Yeah, but it's a...
It's fairly simple concept, right? Right. But aside from now, they have added boss elements and sort of some sort of on-rail stuff.
It's more like a boss level. I mean, the boss on display was... It reminded me... I think I said this in my hands-on preview, but it reminded me of the Scarecrow segments in Arkham Asylum.
Yeah. That's a very good comparison.
Where there's something in the background and you got to kind of avoid its attack. In this case, it's... the dinosaur lava guy spitting the blarg or whatever spitting out
and you can't
fireballs.
Like you don't have any attacks,
right?
Like you're not
going to jump,
right? You can't defeat him really. You just have to avoid him. Like your goal is to just get to the end of the level without him killing you. And you're jumping from one piece of cover to the next,
which is sort of like 3D Land in a little bit when you're fighting Bowser usually.
Yeah,
he kind of jumps in the background.
There's some of that.
But it's really clever because there's risk-reward of, okay, I see some coins over there, but it's kind of optional. Mm-hmm. You know, do I have enough time? Can I time it right? So it's not platforming, but there is still an action risk-reward going on there. It's not pure puzzle, you know?
There's some platforming in the... I mean, it's platforming in some ways like almost similar to the original Donkey Kong because there's a lot of like climbing ladders... falling off of ledges onto new places that you couldn't get to before.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can even fall off a ledge on top of a Goomba and kill a Goomba that way. Even though you can't jump, you can land on top of... you can fall on top of an enemy and kill it that way.
Yep.
It's kind of an advanced move, but it works and you're rewarded for doing it. So there is some kind of light platforming. It is more of a puzzle game, I would say. It's kind of an action puzzle thing. But they're very clever. They're very charming. You know, the character's really cute. My concern as a full retail game is like, am I going to get tired of this stuff? If you chain it all together one after another for a long period of time, you know, the character moves really slowly. The whole thing is very slow paced. It's very thoughtful and meticulous. And there's some appeal to that.
Mm-hmm.
But do I want to play 20 hours of that? Is that too much? Is this...
I don't think it'll be that, though.
Is this more of like a $30 kind of... most people will download it if you don't believe in downloading. You can buy it on a disc. But it's not meant to be like a full-sized... game experience. I'm curious about that. You know?
I think you're going to charge $40 for it, and it'll be both a download and retail. And I say 40 because I think that's what they charge for the Wario
Game and Wario.
Yeah. Well, this is way better than Game and Wario.
Right. So I think that's going to be the slightly more expensive than I like it to be, but not unreasonable price.
Well, and to be fair, I mean, it's pretty. Like it's done in the engine of 3D World. So it's very beautiful and it's, you know, fully 3D models, everything, and great lighting effects, lots of animations. So
I'll be curious to see what environmental aspects they bring, because that'll help keep things interesting.
Right. I mean,
they're clearly pulling from Mario 2 a lot.
Yeah.
They got the turnips in the ground you pull up for coins.
Yeah.
Or in one, there's like a minecart level where you were...
the minecart thing is interesting because it when you're in the minecart, it's on this track and it goes into first person. And immediately I thought Pokemon Snap, right?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
And you're throwing turnips from the minecart, and I think you have unlimited supply, but you're throwing them at things, and you can throw them at coins to pick those up. Mm-hmm. You can throw them at question blocks. You can throw them at enemies to keep them from attacking you.
Power blocks.
But like the view moved so slowly that it was really frustrating.
Yeah.
Like, even more slowly than Pokemon Snap. So, I think they need to work on that a little bit. But it could be cool. You could get a few levels out of that idea.
Yeah.
I mean, Captain Toad is very charming. I like it a lot. I'm curious to see what format that game's released in. But I really don't have anything bad to say about it.
They released box art for that game.
Oh, it's coming out retail. It's a question of price point.
Price point and how much content is in there, and like how much variety is there.
Yeah, is it the kind of game where you play it at E3 and think it's amazing, but then take it home and get bored?
Right, it is a game that demos because
that
very
does
well.
Yeah, that does
for
happen.
Sure.
I think it would be about the same length as a traditional Mario versus Donkey Kong game.
Something
along that line.
Which they also were showing.
Like 80 levels or so.
That would be my guess.
That'd be a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, I certainly did like it a lot. So, let's talk about Yoshi. Yoshi's Woolly World.
Woolly.
Really the opposite of a surprise, and we've known about this game for a long time.
Well, it was a little bit of a surprise in that it was there.
effectively.
Yeah, and then it was changed. That wasn't a
surprise.
I don't know. I mean, we'd heard literally nothing about that game.
Right. I mean, I expected it to be there, certainly. And it doesn't look that much different than, I think it does look better than when they first showed it. Looks a shitload better than Kirby's Epic Yarn.
I like Kirby's Epic Yarn.
Oh, no, I like it too, but I just think
but it that, makes this look like
visually yeah, no, it looks much I mean, more.
The HD graphics are just, because this game is all about that detail.
Yeah.
You know, it's the texture of those materials and the stitchings, you know. Yeah. I mean, literally, like the patterns of the knitting and stuff is like, that is part of the visual design of the game. And that stuff, you know, I mean, one thing people praise Kirby for is it kind of fit into the limitations of the Wii nicely because it the mushiness of being in standard definition made things look fuzzy.
Yeah.
Well, now they don't have to fall back on that. They can just make that stuff look like real materials. And it really does. The only thing I've ever seen that looks anything like it is Little Big Planet.
Sure.
But I think Yoshi looks better than Little Big Planet.
It's better
animated. Certainly plays way better than Little Big Planet. Yep. It felt really good. It felt like a Yoshi game.
Island game.
It absolutely did. It had a lot of the elements you would expect from Yoshi's Island. And, you know, I'm hesitant to say maybe this is the successor to Yoshi's Island that people have been waiting for 15 years because, or 20, almost 20 years. Because how many times is that
story was not in?
Well, just like how many times have people like hoped that the new Yoshi game would be that, and it turned out to not be that, right? Yep. But man, Goodfeel are way better than any of the other developers who've worked on Yoshi lately. And this game, it really did feel a lot like Yoshi's Island, but it doesn't rely on that nostalgia. It also has the new art style. It has new ideas. It just played really well.
One thing I'll note is that in the demo they had it on, the controls were like the default controls in Yoshi's Island where you have to push A again to throw it.
Yeah, you hit it once and the cursor starts moving in the arc up and down, and then you hit it again when you,
it's like timing based. So I'm hoping that they'll have the other option where the hasty or whatever they called it in Yoshi's Island where you just release the button to throw it.
Sure.
That wouldn't work so well with the Wii Remote that they were demoing for the second player, but certainly for the gamepad or the...
Couldn't you also just do the motion control style where you just move it to the angle you want and then hit the button? Some people seem to
really
like that.
I wasn't even told you could do that.
I'm just saying it seems like there's the potential for them to do that.
That would make sense to me. That would be similar to what they did with, like, Shake It.
Yeah, exactly.
So I wouldn't be surprised if that's in the final game. They may not have chosen to show that in the demo.
Right. Man, that game is friggin' beautiful. Like, it looks incredible. The graphics are so... When you see it in person, like, I just want to never stop looking at that. Yeah, it looks so amazing, like, when you play it. And to see it interact, you know, when you... It's just one of those things, like, it looks so good that it's hard to believe you can actually play it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The one thing I will say that I was a little disappointed or worried about is the sound design. It seemed to me that the music was pulling more from, like, a Yoshi's Story type thing. It was very cutesy.
Huh.
What little I could hear of it and what they had blaring from it on the stage. Goodfeel has historically had really good music in their games. But, and this didn't sound like anything like the Goodfeel music from before, but maybe...
It might be placeholder. It might be the first couple levels.
Right.
I didn't even listen to it. I'm glad you were paying attention. But yeah, the Goodfeel guy, I have so much confidence in those guys' soundtracks that I'm not that worried. Because Kirby, I mean, for all its many flaws, I thought Kirby's Epic Yarn soundtrack is unbelievably good. And Wario Land Shake It even better for me. So I'm not that worried about the music. But I have high hopes for that game. I really wish it was coming out this year.
Yeah.
I don't understand what they've been working on it so long, it seems like, at least.
Yeah.
But you know, and it's yet another 2D platformer, but this one seems like really high quality.
I'll give it a pass.
Yeah.
I'm the biggest 2D platformer complainer ever, but I'll give it a pass. It looks really good.
The two-player is really nice. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that they're doing that, and the two-players, they interact with each other in some interesting ways.
Yeah.
And I kind of scoffed at first when the demonstrator said, you can play two-player to get through some of the tougher parts. And I'm like, how tough is this really going to be? But I was talking to you guys later, and it sounds like this might actually be like more on the order of Yoshi's Island difficulty. Much closer to that than Kirby's Epic Yarn, at least.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can die in this game. You know, and with two players, it's kind of the new Super Mario Brothers type thing where if one dies, you can, the other one will respawn.
Yeah, you swap off.
But if you both die, and that happened to me once when I was playing with someone, you die and you go back to a, you know, a restart point.
There are checkpoints.
It was a checkpoint, yeah. But yeah.
And single player, it might be a lot more difficult.
Oh, yeah.
You really have to be more thoughtful about what you're doing. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it, as you'd expect from the guys that make Kirby's Epic Yarn, like the way that the yarn and the wool and the fabric ideas are built into the levels and the mechanics are so smart and interesting to mess around with. So, yeah, I think it's going to turn out really well.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I have a lot of positive feelings about it.
As someone who would look at other Yoshi Island demos from prior E3s for Yoshi's New Island and the DS game.
Yeah.
I would immediately go, eh, this doesn't feel right. And inevitably, I'd be right. People say, yeah, it's not a good Yoshi game. This one feels right.
It does.
This one feels right.
Yeah, right off the bat. And it looks amazing. So speaking of Kirby, there was a new Kirby game.
There was.
And it was a real surprise. A sequel to Canvas Curse, which is certainly one of my favorite Kirby games.
Yeah, that's a great game.
The weird thing to me about Kirby and the Rainbow Curse is that it feels exactly like Canvas Curse.
Yes.
And that game came out, what, 9 years ago now?
Yep. Yeah.
It's been a while since I played it, but I picked it back up, and I still remember some of the same techniques mm-hmm. about, you know, kind of the shapes that you want to use to get it. Because that game is tough to control. Like, Kirby doesn't do exactly what you want. You have to sort of, like,
nudge him.
You have to will him into the right position a lot of times.
Yeah.
So as you play it, you get to, like, you curve things a certain way, or you draw the line above him rather than below him if he's underwater. There's a lot of little tricks to it. And I remembered some of them, not others, but it really does play exactly the same. And it uses an interesting art style. Everything's made of clay.
Yep.
Yeah, it looked really good.
It does look really good.
It looked amazing.
Yeah, it looks different. Looks nice. You know, what they showed, it's hard to comment on it that much because it is really exactly the same concept as the DS game. And I'm really curious to see if they do anything new with it, if they expand on those ideas, or if they're just content to be like, look, we made another one of those that you like.
Yeah, I mean, it's been 9 years.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, right. And that might be okay if they just make another one. But
The music on that one was good. Near the end of the show, I didn't have much to do. I'm like, you know what? I want to walk around with my own headphones, which in some cases helped.
Did you plug them in the gamepad?
Yeah,
and in some games it didn't really help because they weren't playing any audio out of them, and others did. Kirby, they did play out of the headphones there, and it sounded really good. I couldn't tell if it was orchestrated or not, but it had very high fidelity sounding instrumentation, and mm-hmm. you know, parts that were very cheerful, other parts were very pensive and thoughtful kind of sounding, and I just thought it really sounded good.
Yeah.
I can't put a finger on exactly what it was, but I really liked how it sounded, and I'm hopeful that it'll just sort of have a playfulness that mm-hmm. Really fits that claymation art style and work really well.
Yeah. The art style actually looked to me, it reminded me of Claymates on Super Nintendo. You guys ever play that? It's a good game.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's a really good game. I mean, it looks a lot better than that. I mean, it really looks like things are actually made of clay, but actually that game did too because, you know, they were like taking photos of clay models and then animating them. So how does it compare
to like Clay Fighter?
Well, same idea though, right? I mean, the reason Clay Fighter looks kind of cool is because those characters are actual clay. Like, they took photo. It's like Mortal Kombat, you know? They were just doing like stop motion animation. So it just looked so cool back then. And it really still does. Like, you don't see stuff like that anymore. So it's not necessarily a new idea, this art style, but it hasn't been done that much. The only thing I can think of is like the Swapper, you know? That's the only recent game. That I played that looks like that, or like the Neverhood, which is not recent at all. It's a little newer than Super Nintendo, I guess. But
I mean, it's Canvas Curse with clay. I mean, that's really what that game is. That could be your impressions.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if they kind of reveal any kind of twists on that. But so far, I mean, it is exactly what it looks like, and there's not that much more to say about it. But it played well. I know some people were concerned that you do kind of have to play the game on the gamepad screen, like the TV. You can't really look at the TV while you play it.
You can't fully appreciate the art style when you're playing it, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it still looks really good. And I think one nice thing about the claymation is that it does, like, it displays well on the gamepad screen, whereas some other styles may not.
Really?
You know, some things I think you lose some fidelity, but for me, I thought, yeah, I thought the colors really popped on the gamepad screen because they're very bright.
Oh, the colors pop. I didn't get the feeling I was playing with clay when I was on the gamepad. It just felt like another Kirby game. Mm-hmm. I couldn't really see the art style.
I mean, I could notice it some, like when you hit a star and it sort of looked like clay being torn apart.
Yeah, but in general.
But you really to get the vibe looking at the TV did give you more.
It may be a game where the people watching you play it may appreciate it differently yeah. than you do as you're playing it. Yeah. So, but I do think it'll be good for spectators because looks awesome on the TV for sure.
I mean, those are two really hyper stylized, really cool looking games. Kirby was next year?
Kirby is next year.
Yeah.
Most things are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, unfortunately. But that was a very pleasant surprise.
Yeah, it was.
Kirby, I was like, wow, you guys made another Canvas Curse? That's amazing, you know, and put it on Wii U, that's a good idea.
Yep.
And it played really well, so it was tough. Man, that underwater level is rough.
Oh, it's tough.
I mean, Canvas Curse is a pretty tough game anyway. It's just, it's hard to kind of wrap your head around how to control it.
Yeah.
And they weren't messing around in that demo.
Oh,
like that, some of those levels are really tough. So that was nice to see. You know, I'm all for, like, that's one thing I like about Canvas Curse is it is more challenging than most other Kirby games. So they're definitely going to keep that up.
Right.
And then I figured let's wrap up this segment with Xenoblade. Xenoblade. We didn't
Xenoblade
get
Xenoblade Chronicles X.
Yes.
Or just Xenoblade.
Please, Ekusu.
Actually, it might.
XCX.
Yeah, or Xenoblade X in Japan for some reason.
Hmm. Well, we did not get to play it ourselves, but James and I were in the front row over the Treehouse demo. We watched the Treehouse guys play it for, I think it was Rich Amtower playing it.
Yep.
For 45 minutes from the very beginning of the game, like literally started a new file, watched the opening cutscene, created a character, went through all the opening. He skipped some of the tutorial stuff and some of the early story scenes so they could get into gameplay a little faster.
Right. Yeah.
But ran around the world in the starting area. Unbelievably beautiful
as a
place.
Level one character, fought level one monsters.
Yep.
They actually grinded a little bit so they could beat the boss at the end of the demo. I mean, this is just they cut the front of the game off.
Yeah, it was not a vertical slice at all. It wasn't like we made this very special piece of the demo that you won't even see in the final game. Like, this looked like, you know, the beginning of the game is finished, we're working on the end. Now we're going to show you someone playing through the beginning of the game. And you never see that at E3. It was weird to see that demo. Yeah.
Now, was there anything notable in the character creation part?
Yeah, I was curious about
it. It's kind of no frills. I mean, you can change the face a little bit and the hair color. And I don't think there's even all that many skin colors you can pick from. You can play as a male or female. So I know that'll make some people happy.
Interesting. I wonder if they incorporate that into the plot.
I'm guessing that they don't.
I think your avatar is just. I think the characters around your avatar are probably the plot drivers, and you're just sort of hanging on.
Yeah.
Right.
Good.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're not. Your character, I doubt, is going to be as interesting as like Shulk.
Right.
Although Shulk wasn't the most interesting main character. I mean, he had some backstory.
He had some interaction with the other character. I think his interaction with the other characters has probably made him interesting.
Right, yeah. And they might still be able to do that with your created character. It'll be interesting to see. But, you know, the character models aren't terribly detailed in this game. They were pretty bad, I thought, in the first Xenoblade.
Yeah.
They're better in this, but they don't compare at all to the environments and the monsters.
Yeah.
Those look amazing.
The faces, they still don't look very great.
No,
the faces are still weird. That's an old Monolith Soft specialty.
Yep. That seems to be part of their weird identity. But dude, the even in this very early part of the game, the environments that they were running around in, I thought were jaw-dropping.
They're massive.
They're humongous, full of stuff. Like, so many layers deep of things, like pieces of rock coming up out of the ground, lakes, giant monsters drinking out of the water, cliffs with waterfalls coming over, huge formations off in the background, like giant ships flying overhead. Just crazy, like amazing clouds. The skybox is gorgeous. All of this stuff, and it's all in HD. I mean, all this stuff, like you could say a lot of this for Xenoblade. You know, the environment design was just incredible, but it did seem held back by the technology. That's no longer an issue. And this game, I thought, in a lot of aspects, I thought this was one of the best looking games I've ever seen. In the environment, it's just stunning.
Yeah.
It's just like, I want to play. I just want to be in that world. I want to spin the camera around. It all ran really smoothly. Mm-hmm. You know, amazing draw distance. I mean, you could just see for hundreds of miles, it felt like.
Yeah.
And the environment really felt rich, and it felt like very three-dimensional, and that there was something to look at from any angle.
Is there any pop-in at all?
No.
No.
So they disguised that pretty well?
Yeah. It's just so impressive. Yeah. So, you know, the monster design's really cool, like giant kind of dinosaur-looking creatures that are huge, like
these flying monstrosities that had like bioluminescence and seemed to fly by like moving their ribs. It was really,
yeah.
I mean, because this place thinks it's on an alien world, they can just do whatever they want, and they've opted to do exactly that.
Yeah, but the sense of scale in all this is just amazing.
So, was there any like mech combat, anything like that?
No, because it was the very beginning of the game, yeah. So they didn't get into that stuff at all. They showed plenty of battles, but they were, you know, pretty run of the mill. They hadn't unlocked many abilities yet, so they were doing real simple, basic stuff.
I mean, the plot to that point is your character escaped from this ship, an escape capsule, and they were going to pick him up and take him back to the settlement they've created,
which is called Neo Los Angeles.
Yeah, it is called Neo Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I mean, they never actually even made it into the settlement. The demo ends right before they go inside.
We saw the inside in some cutscenes.
Yeah, yeah.
Parts of it actually kind of look like L.A.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's like giant United States banner on the outside of this ARC ship and the big American flag. So
yeah,
this is more grounded in our reality. It's like more connected to our world than the first Xenoblade was.
Right.
But it's on a different planet.
These people... See, Earth has been destroyed in the intro to this game. There's these aliens attacked, and in the war against the aliens, Earth was destroyed.
It wasn't even that. It was these aliens just needed a battlefield to fight each other and just said, oh, this'll do.
Oh, really? We got caught in the middle.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'd missed that part. Humanity escapes Earth on these big ARC ships. And they're having this mass migration across the universe, but the aliens show up and attack the fleet, and one of the ARC ships, the one from United States, gets diverted from the fleet and crash lands on this planet, and that's the planet that the game takes place on.
Okay.
So I'm really curious to see like what parts of American or like the Japanese version of American culture.
Yeah.
Monolith has done a really good job capturing American culture. they've done some real deep case studies, and
yeah, they're gonna bring back all the characters.
Yeah,
from Disaster
Day of
Crisis.
Ray is actually he's the Rhyme replacement.
It's gonna be tornadoes inside of Neo Los Angeles. I'm really excited to see
fire tornadoes.
Yeah, fire tornadoes. Yeah, when they and giant bears.
Oh Lord.
Look, I would, if they make a character that looks just like Ray, I would be so happy. I would literally just be overjoyed.
I'll be curious to see if the entire game takes place on that one planet or whether later in the game you go to other planets that may have very different environments.
It is possible, but I mean, it's a planet. And the thing about Xenoblade is they don't like fudge scale, right?
Yeah.
So when they put you on this planet, I feel confident that it's going to feel the size of a planet. Like, it's huge, you know? Okay. I mean, obviously, they're not going to build a literal planet-sized environment for us, but they're going to make it feel enormous. It's going to take a long time to get from one place to another, and there's going to be lots of interesting stuff along the way. So if it all takes place on the one planet, I'm okay with that because I know that they're not going to make it feel cramped.
Yeah, they'll have Himalayan mountains and they'll have lava pits and they'll have, you know,
and the ocean all of that. Yeah. Absolutely. And lots of stuff that is, you know, just made up.
Right.
So, because they're very imaginative people. So, you know, the main overall feeling I got out of watching that demo and the cutscene that was shown at the digital event, which was on a, that was on a monitor in the booth, but it's the same one. The main feeling I got was this sure is Xenoblade 2. Like, it seems to play very similarly. It has a lot of the same themes. It has all the same qualities in terms of things I like. I mean, you still get experience when you explore and you find cool new places, and they reward you for that.
Yeah.
That's my favorite thing about Xenoblade.
Yeah.
And
well, especially when they put such a premium on creating such like a deep, immersive world.
Right. They want
to
find that stuff.
Yep.
And I want to find
it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. That feedback loop is so great.
Yeah.
It just feels like a huge game, and that's exactly what I want it to be.
Yep.
The battle system seems very, very similar to before, which I don't love the battle system in Xenoblade, but I like it. It's good enough. It's interesting, and I'm okay with it. I just got really excited for this game. Like, in a way, like, before it always seemed a little abstract. I was excited to see whatever these guys did next. And then when it looked like it was going to be at least similar to Xenoblade, then I got even more excited. And now that I see this, it feels like a sequel-ass sequel to Xenoblade, and I'm so happy about that.
Yeah.
Because there's so much more they can do with it on the new hardware, and it really feels like they are taking advantage of that with the visual design. So I'm thrilled.
Yep.
I'm super psyched about Xenoblade.
And you can go watch that demo that we were over there on the Nintendo Twitch feed, and I think they do a crowd sweep camera, so you may even see us just staring at them.
We were in the front row.
Yep.
Yeah. If you like Xenoblade, I would strongly recommend watching that demo.
Yep.
You will get so excited.
So they did do the demo again later in the week, and they spent more time on the character creator, and you can make screwed up looking characters.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
So now, realistically, when do you think it's going to come out?
I'm thinking summer of next year.
In Japan or in worldwide?
Both.
Do you think they're going to try to push for a near simultaneous release?
Even if it's like 3 months apart or whatever. But, you know, I mean, the thing is, this time around, they are setting this up to be a Western release more than they ever did with the first
one. Yeah, that's true.
Right? So I feel confident that there's not going to be a humongous delay like there was last time, and that they're not going to get wishy-washy on whether or not they'll release it. I mean, they have established very clearly an expectation that this game is going to be released here. It was demoed by the Treehouse, which is their localization department.
So,
I'm pretty sure they're already working on it.
And they've taken the effort to subtitle text into English, except for the demo, which is just straight Japanese everywhere.
Right. Yeah. I mean, with all these games, I mean, it's to the point where I'm just wondering, 2015 is going to be a massive logjam of games.
Yeah, for everybody.
So I'm looking for something to fall into 2016.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
something has to.
Oh, Zelda will.
They're not.
Zelda is probably the most likely.
Zelda is not a 2015 game.
It won't be Xenoblade.
Yeah.
Speaking of Zelda, man, how freaking awesome is this.
Looking good.
I don't know. Yeah. I wish they had shown what was somebody controlled something.
It's not. That's a video. It's so early.
That is a video.
Yeah, it's a video. It looks super pretty.
Well, yeah, but it's a video.
It's
I don't put much faith in how pretty a video
is.
Let me say,
if it was only that video with no explanation, I'd be kind of dubious about what to take away from that video. But with Aonuma explaining exactly what they're trying to do and the reasons for that and their inspirations and their plans, that makes me feel a lot better that, yes, this is what it looks like. It's a humongous Zelda world for you to explore and go do crazy stuff.
I think it may functionally look like that. I don't think it will aesthetically look that nice, is my point. I think that looks really... If the Wii U can do that, I will be really surprised.
You think that video is too good to be true?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think they're really benefiting from having Monolith Soft around.
Yeah. Oh, they're straight up on.
I think that's going to really affect them.
I think they're competing with each other.
No.
Monolith we make shit like this all the time. Here's how you do it.
Since Xenoblade came out in Japan, Monolith has been listed on the credits of almost every first party Nintendo Wii and Wii U game.
No kidding.
They have been all over the place.
Yeah, they've been around. Like,
my guess is they built utilities for Nintendo to make their games look real pretty.
Interesting.
Yeah,
that's very interesting.
And I think that. I don't know, I just get the sense that, you know, this game obviously will be in 2016, but I also get the sense that I think that over the past year or so, they've probably moved people off the pre-production of that game onto other games just to get them out the door. So that's probably why it's not as far along as you would think.
Yeah.
Because it's obviously pretty early, or else they would have showed something playable or
Which
something
game?
Like that.
Which game? Xenoblade?
Zelda.
Oh, yeah, Zelda is really early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's the thing, it's been like on the radar for so long that there must have been something happened early on that took people off.
Let me put it this way. It felt to me less authentic than that first video we got for Twilight Princess. Because that showed what were clearly in-game assets moving against each other.
Yes, yeah.
Certainly.
So I'm real dubious about that video. Even incredibly dubious about the 2015 day.
Once the camera changed and it went into the more close-up scene with the bridge and the monster and Zelda / Link / whoever that was shooting the bow and arrow, all that stuff seemed very doable to me on Wii U. Yeah. It's the initial scene out in the field where you can see off into the distance.
Well, and they have things like grasses moving in opposite directions and things. It's like that seems like something you can do in a static demo, essentially.
Huh. So, yeah, you may be right. I'd be okay with it, though. I mean, I was surprised at how good it looked. I don't need it to look that good.
And I think that's
what I want
fine.
Is the sense of scale. I want what I would love is a Zelda game in a Xenoblade-like world, and that's kind of what they're getting at.
Monolith Soft could help them with.
I just worry though that's going to diminish the puzzle-solving elements of Zelda.
And it'll be really interesting to see. Because
I mean, it straight up does that in Between Worlds. The puzzles are not as good in that game as they are in previous Zelda games. Period.
Hmm.
And I struggle to see how they'll be able to pull that off.
Well, part of that, James, was the lack of fixed progression. I don't want this to become a Link Between Worlds discussion, but I think you could really see a lot more action emphasis on the overworld and still have some very good puzzles in dungeons.
But they're still saying there won't be fixed progression. I mean, he says that explicitly.
Well, he says he wants you to be able to approach things from different angles. That's not necessarily the same as you being able to do things in whatever order you want.
His comment was, in previous Zelda games, you went from dungeon to dungeon in order.
Yeah.
And basically, is it then going to say that's not what we're trying to accomplish here?
Yeah.
So, being
I think you can gate progress, though. I mean, all open world games do this.
You'd have to.
Even Link Between Worlds does it to some extent.
To some extent.
And you could do that more, and then there may be advantages to doing that. But, you know, it remains to be seen. But I just got so excited. I think that trailer did exactly what they wanted it to do, which was to make me, like, start frothing at the mouth about Zelda all over again. And it's been a while since I felt that way.
Well,
so.
I mean, beautiful people wanted to hear open world, and they got open world.
Yeah,
to a certain degree. At least they were saying that they were going in that direction.
Yeah, but that shot in the field, oh my god. Yeah. That was like...
I almost kind of wish they just left it with that shot in the field and hadn't done the riding scene, just left it there and been somewhat ambiguous about it.
Yeah.
Because, to me, that part seemed more realistic than the fighting part. Just because the camera angles they had chosen, they implemented some bullet time stuff in there. It just seemed really heavily produced.
I mean, that looked like a cutscene.
Yeah.
Not gameplay.
Right. I feel like being more... you know, real opaque about what they were doing would have been a more...
Well, to be fair, they're still pretty mysterious.
Yeah.
mm-hmm. We still don't know much about this game, but there's a lot to think about and to talk about. So anyway, why don't we take a break? And when we come back, we'll do a little more. We'll hear from John, get some of his questions and thoughts about the show, and maybe tell a couple of stories about some of the crazy stuff that happened.
Whoa.
I'll fall off a bed.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll do that.
Okay, we are back for another segment on this RFN E3 special live in California. John, let's hear a little bit from you and what you were interested in from E3, what you'd like to hear us talk about.
Well, let's start off by talking about 2015.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I love that
how
year.
Everything was moved into 2015.
That is a number.
It appears that it will be the greatest year of all time in video games.
Possibly, that's the greatest year of our lives.
except for when they get delayed further.
Yeah,
it is what the Mayans predicted.
Yeah, I mean, I was really surprised watching the Direct how much stuff. It was almost became a running punchline. Even stuff like Mario Maker, where I looked at that title and I thought, well, this is obviously something that they can get out to the market quickly, and it's going to be, you know, this year. Oh, no, wait a minute. It's 2015.
Right.
So, I mean, on that point, we had kind of made a game of it for the previous press conferences. Oh, it was 2015. That when we saw a game, I can't remember what it was, that was 2016, we actually got kind of excited at the honesty of it all. So to see that Nintendo just rolled, what, 5 2015 games? I mean, it was real brutal.
Yeah, what's surprising about that is they're the ones that most urgently need games out on the market. So to
I would argue all three of the new platforms pretty urgently need games on the market.
Yeah, they're in a kind of a glut right now.
Yeah.
You know, they got their launch window stuff out.
Mm-hmm. Here's my theory on it, John. Stuff like Mario Maker, I agree with you. Like, you look at that and you think, this doesn't seem like a huge project. It seems like something they could maybe crank out. But my theory is that has not been around for very long.
Right.
And my theory is that Nintendo, being in their situation, that, you know, they come to E3, they know they're going to get compared to Microsoft and Sony, even though they're in a very different situation.
Yeah.
They don't have the third-party support. And they've already released some of their big guns on their systems that Microsoft and Sony have not, you know, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
So Nintendo feels like, look, we need to show some kind of parity. We need to bring a big slate of games. As like I said before the show, they need to show people that Wii U is a viable platform in the long term, because they don't want to discourage people from buying the system because they think it's dead in the water, right? They want you to feel like there's a lot going down next year.
Yeah.
The other thing is they want to show as much software as they can, because they don't want people to feel like, well, they really can only do two or three games at a time. Like, Nintendo can work on a lot of things at the same time. They just can't release it all at the same time. So my theory is stuff like Mario Maker, maybe even Kirby, some of these other games that, you know, Zelda, they may not have planned to show it in 2015, but maybe they were kind of forced to by their situation. Some of the stuff I feel like was probably shown, was like prepped at relatively last minute for E3.
Yeah.
Stuff like Mario Maker, I bet you was, it's not that they never would have released it as a game, but maybe they hadn't really started production on it, you know, and they were, it's not really something they normally would have shown. We heard about this from Miyamoto. He said, you know, like, I, Nintendo, basically, the company didn't really want me to show stuff like Star Fox at this because it's so early.
Exactly.
And Miyamoto is saying, like, I really wanted to show. I wanted people to know that we're making Star Fox. I want people to get excited for it. I want to show off the ideas that I have for the gamepad with it. And he, apparently Miyamoto fought really hard even to get it shown as much as it was at E3, which was barely. It was
right.
Like,
yeah, they don't really show
it. It wasn't even behind closed doors.
Yeah, yeah, just, and what we were told about the Project Guard and Project Giant Robot is that they made the decision to show those very, very late.
Oh, I believe
which is
it.
Why those don't have proper booths created for them.
But they don't even proper title. They're but called Project.
Yeah, yeah. Ultimately, yeah. The reason they got shown was because he pushed them really hard to show it. And it sounded like the reason he pushed so hard is they want feedback on these things. I mean, I got grilled pretty hard after one of my Mario Maker go-throughs. By somebody who was taking relatively intricate notes. So,
really?
Yeah, so my guess is these things are quite early.
Yes. That happened to me once with the Pilot Wings notes in 3DS. There was someone who was like, well, what was your favorite thing? What would you want to put in there if you didn't?
Yeah,
like, I like the cave in the N64 game. You know, and they did include a cave and you know, everything there. Who knows? That might have been my idea. You know? I'll take credit for that one.
You and 100 other people who gave the same feedback. But yeah, absolutely.
So that is good. Because I think there's a lot of potential in that.
Yeah, I mean, I was getting questions like, what items need to be in this? Yeah. And I gave them a couple tile sets need to go in there. Yeah. Why can't I get a Firefly? Like, yeah, we know.
Now, how was the booth set up? Was it the idea that people would go in and make their own areas and then people would play through them?
Like, so the game, Smash Brothers at the very front. Like, any of the sides of the booth that you would be most likely to enter from, the first thing you see is Smash Brothers.
So there wasn't
you had
to go. So it wasn't like really a Mario Maker area. Was
there
just
they had two kiosks.
Yeah. They had two.
But it was like, that stuff was like fairly far back and kind of on its back facing side.
Yeah, it was on the end cap. To
you had to be looking for Mario Maker to find it.
Yeah, and so you were making levels, not playing through other people's levels.
It was kind of both.
Yeah, you do both really from the same.
Yeah.
It's weird, like you make your own levels and then you play them yourself is kind of the way it works.
Okay. You could hand it off to someone, your buddy, to play it. And they had like three preset ones that show off some of the crazy crap they could do. One of them was really evil.
Yeah, it was nuts.
Yeah.
But you can actually, what I liked about that game was you can pause it at any point to edit the level, and you can actually see all the movements Mario has made up to that point. So you can sort of use that to line up things to land on them.
There's a timeline slider at the bottom.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can actually rewind progression of the level back to a previous point and move Mario and all the state of all the enemies and items back to an earlier point. So you can rewind all that stuff. If you say like, well, I couldn't make this jump. Like, I tried the jump, and I couldn't make it, so now I know that I need to move the platform farther away. You can rewind the level 5 seconds, 10 seconds, whatever, back to before you made that jump, then put the platform, then replay it from that point. You don't have to start over at the beginning every time.
Yeah.
And then try that jump again, and maybe it works the second time.
It's not really a timeline thing, Jay. It's more of a location in the stage.
Yeah.
You can spawn Mario anywhere in the stage, so you can just retry that one section to tweak it and over and over.
Right,
again.
Right.
I mean, it was of the booths, it was one of the most actively managed as well. Like, the person on it was clearly not just hired to, all right, this is the best of ones, and then this is coming out in 2015. Have fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this was somebody who was aware of what was going on as that game was being played and was very active while you were playing it.
Well, it requires more instruction, right?
It
you don't
does.
Know that you have to shake to turn the green turtle into a red turtle.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, or that the, you know, the green turtles with wings will fall down and jump up and down, whereas the red ones will stay in the air and fly around. Right. And things that, even if you're really familiar with Mario, you may not, you know, have caught on, or maybe because it's so, you know, you don't normally see wings on a piranha plant.
Right.
So you won't really know what that, you know.
What is the behavior of that?
Right. So, I agree. That one, they were clearly looking for feedback and more interested in making sure people had a
good, and I think people working in the booth are taking mental notes as well.
Yeah.
I mean.
Well, they saved one.
They saved the stage I built. They grabbed the controller when I put it down. It's like, can we save this? I'm like, yeah. And they hit a button and it hit another button and it came up with a save
security!
Part.
Security! Get this guy! Don't let him leave the building!
His questions are too good.
Yes. So, yeah, I mean, I think they probably saved a bunch of levels to take back for kind of review by the people who are making the game.
Yeah, oh, that's good.
Now, what games does it pull from in terms of elements?
Now, it's every element in that game is from the original Super Mario Brothers, although you can flip the art style to new Super Mario Brothers. I did hear from a PR rep who was not attached to the kiosk that they are talking about other games.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Including elements from other games and other art styles.
They aren't dedicated to the physics of Mario 1 because the handling was not Mario 1 handling. It felt good, but it wasn't... I mean, you could hold down A and jump higher when you jumped off an enemy, which I don't think you could do in the original Super Mario.
And they had a weird, like, skinny mushroom that made you jump like Luigi. It was weird.
Yeah.
But to get back to the 2015 question, I think things like Mario Maker were just shown in a much earlier state than Nintendo normally does at E3. And it's one thing, if you haven't been to E3, it's probably hard to appreciate this, but Nintendo's demos and the things in their booth are always way more polished than you get in anybody else's booth. They don't show things that are too early to play. For Nintendo doesn't show anything that's not playable almost ever.
I mean, Xenoblade.
Yeah, Xenoblade is obviously an exception, but very rarely do they have anything in their booth that's not playable.
Yeah.
They don't, and especially don't have something that, like, someone is there to play it for you, but they won't let you touch the controller.
Yeah.
That pretty much never, that's normal in other booths. Mm-hmm. Like, you hear about press, and they go around, they have appointments at all these different companies. They go see Batman, they go see the New Order, they see, you know, the Order 1886, they go see Destiny, they go see all this stuff. In a lot of cases, they don't even get to play those games.
No,
they're going into a theater that there's a long line for, they skip to the front, they see someone play it. This is the problem with, like, that Aliens Colonial Marines game.
They're very controlled experiences.
But to be fair, Johnny, Nintendo does do that. They just do it in a different way. They have their round tables where they showed off things, and they had their, this year, they had that E3
Projects
live thing where they did the Xenoblade demo. So they are doing it, but they aren't wasting the actual floor space really to do it. They have the stuff that people come to the booth for is usually stuff that's hands-on. I think that's your point.
That's fair.
When you walk into the booth, it isn't to wait in line to see a video of something. It's to go there and have hands on the controller.
Yeah, I mean, there's always some booths there that are pretty much just like garrisons. Yeah. Where no one gets in unless they're invited.
Right.
Warner Brothers is super guilty of that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they literally had walls around their booth.
Yeah, there's nothing. It's like, just get out of here. You don't have an appointment? Get out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the thing with Nintendo is when you walk in their booth and you play one of those demos, it, to me, I always get the sense that it feels like the game's already finished and they just cut off a little piece and they said, you can play this piece. Like, they feel complete and polished and they look nice and they aren't buggy and they have, you know, all the features that you would expect and they just work. And they run well. You know, like Smash Brothers. Like, that is an incredibly polished E3 demo.
Right.
That game's very advanced in development also. But, you know, that's just... To me, Nintendo tends to not show things that are super early. And a lot of other companies do.
Yeah.
That's a really good example. That game is super polished for being a 2015 game.
Right. And this year, I felt that... And I think this ties into the reason a lot of these are 2015 games. I do feel like they showed some things earlier than they normally do.
Yeah.
And Mario Maker is a very good example of that.
Mm-hmm. But if they only showed 2014 games, they wouldn't have had a hell of a lot to show.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. And there have been years when that was their strategy. We're only going to show you things that are coming out in the next 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
After that, you'll have to wait for next E3. Well, they can't really take that position right now. They're in too much danger. Their market share is very poor right now. The sales aren't nearly good enough to be that conservative. So they had to push out and they had to show more aggressively show what's coming, because they need people to be excited. They want you to buy the system now based on the expectation of what's coming out down the road.
Yeah.
Not just what's already available and what's coming out in the next few months.
Yeah, I mean, I came out of it saying, okay, well, for 2014 Smash is basically, that's what they're riding.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple other games.
And it was obvious that was
always the case. And they're going to keep riding Mario Kart 8.
But that's it.
Right, and Mario Kart 8 will get remarketed several times through the rest of the year. And into next year.
You will have a Luigi Dest era in the next couple weeks.
Well, and they may do stuff like Mario Kart DLC. To try to, because that's a good way to get people talking about Mario Kart again.
Absolutely.
And as well as to make extra money for Mario Kart, but also just to get it, make it relevant again in 4 or 5 months.
Yeah, but for 2014, there are no surprises. There's nothing behind the curtain.
Well, yeah.
There could be like an NES Remix type thing that comes out.
Yeah, it'll be kind of smaller scale stuff.
And there's stuff like Captain Toad, which is also, I would say, kind of small scale, you know, but like it's cool, but it's not like an earth shattering.
I mean, and on the handheld side, they've got games coming that they're probably okay with. They've got a Pokemon game coming.
Yep.
They've got
huge
Leighton Wright in North America. Everywhere else already got
Fossil Fighters.
They really want to push that Fossil Fighters brand, except to us. They've got a couple other games. So I mean, there's nothing. Oh, and they've got Smash Brothers again.
And they have the Sonic 3DS game, which is super not awesome.
I just want to talk about Sonic Boom.
I've been waiting to drop the boom.
All right,
Boom is terrible.
Yeah,
especially on 3DS.
Let's just go with it. Sonic Boom for 3DS is a bad game, and Sega should feel bad. There. All right.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, I don't feel like that's kind of new. I don't think that's the first time we've said that about Sega in a game.
We don't have to harp on that. The console version is more interesting, I think. I played it yesterday, sort of by accident. I just happened... Well, I was kind of...
You were looking for Smash Brothers, and you just happened to see...
No. I was basically going around trying to play some of the games I had not yet played, and I didn't even realize Sonic Boom was in the Nintendo booth. Yeah. I hadn't noticed it before. And I walked around, I basically turned around a corner, and like, there it was, nobody was playing. And I was like, well, I guess I'll
play. That was a pretty normal state for that game, too.
Yeah. You know, you look at it, and it just doesn't look that great. You know, I thought it played okay. It's much closer to, I felt like the design of it was closer to something like Sonic Heroes, in terms of it seems to be more combat-focused. It seems to spend a lot of time with you, like, sort of in arenas, you're battling guys, it's less platformy. Mm-hmm. Sonic Heroes is a terrible game.
Yes.
And Sonic Boom so far seems better than that, I'll say right off the bat.
Sonic Heroes is the great theme song.
No. I mean, it has a theme song, but it's not great.
Yeah.
So Sonic Boom is better than terrible.
Exactly.
Sonic Boom is better than terrible. Yeah,
it's better than terrible.
That's fair.
We're not stating that for the 3DS game.
Yeah, but the Wii U game, I played it for 10 minutes, and, you know, it's weird, because Sonic doesn't move that fast.
He does in the action stage. This is the fourth stage, which is more like a traditional Sonic game.
Oh, I didn't play that one.
Yeah, so it's like the physics feel very different in that one. It's just like, okay, now it's a Sonic game.
Oh, really?
But it has a Sonic game with bad slowdown in terms of the frame rate.
Well,
so
that could be the demo.
You wanted to play a Sonic game.
Could be.
Yeah.
Yeah, the slowdown could just be the demo.
Maybe.
But, the stage I played, there was a mine cart I was having to push through along rails, and it had a bouncy thing on top. It was a very light platforming, but it was a lot of stop, fight five dudes before you can move on to the next area. There was some kind of, you know, he has a grapple beam now, and you have to use that to manipulate the environment sometimes and pull on things in order to open switches.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know that people want to do that in a Sonic game. I mean, it's different, but it didn't really feel like Sonic to me. There's a lot of chatter.
That feels like Sonic.
Well, yeah, but Knuckles was Knuckles was there. I don't know if you can control Knuckles.
Oh, you could switch between the characters that were available at any time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The guy demoing the game was like so blasé, could not be less interested in what I was doing. Didn't tell me anything about the game. He just said, "You want to play?" And I was like, "Okay."
Yeah.
And that's about the last thing
that's
he said.
That's a pretty hard sell.
That sounds like the Mario Party 10 demo at Mantua's. No, not really.
Oh. I got a little more attention than that, I guess, when I was playing at the Nintendo
booth. I really didn't know what was going on, so I'm just trying to figure it out on my own.
The second adventure stages, I'm calling them, with similar kind of basically combination of combat and platforming, was more interesting than the one you played,
I thought,
by far.
Good.
And I think Sonic and Amy were the two characters, and there was kind of a branching path type thing, depending on which character you were controlling. And the Amy ones had a bit of more of a platforming path to them, that slower pace, but it was decent.
Yeah.
So there was potential there. Supposedly it's co-op, so I could see it being kind of fun in the way, you know, Ninja Turtles games is fun, two-player co-op kind of a thing, but right. depends on how well it rhymes with two players and so on and so forth. Supposedly, they didn't show it on the floor, but supposedly you'd be able to play with, like, yeah, well, I think it would be one person on the gamepad and the other person on the TV.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that's good.
So if that actually is what they're doing and they pull it off and it runs okay, I think that would be, you know, appealing feature of the game.
Yeah. I think there's some potential there. I mean, the fighting didn't feel that great to me, quite frankly. Okay. And
better
the
than
stage
Heroes.
I played, there was a lot of fighting. Well, the problem in Heroes is mainly that when you fought, usually your moves would throw you off a ledge. So,
yes.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, this is a huge issue in that game.
No, actually, no, because that's what you want to do when you play a Sonic game, so it's fine.
Yeah, you want your attacks to fling
you. No, you want to
jump off a bridge, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, John, do you have any other questions for us? Going back on the rails?
Was there any NWR Splatoon action going on?
Yeah, quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
So explain that, because that's a game I'm really interested in.
We
so
played Splatoon quite a bit.
That,
yeah. I mean, Splatoon, I played a lot of it the first day because it was a surprise, right?
Right. Yeah.
That not a game that we really expected, and certainly not in that form. I know you had some predictions that were along those lines. You know, I mean, I think it was kind of a half.
Yeah, it turned things on its head, though, definitely.
Yeah. But that was part of your predictions. You thought they would have their own twist on it, and they certainly did. You know, the weird thing to me was the first day, people were like, that game. Like, the visually, it doesn't look like a Nintendo game. And
right.
I'm like, are we looking at the same thing?
I still kind of feel like it doesn't.
Kind of to feels me, like the Blob or something like that.
Yeah.
But it's kind of what it feels like to me.
But also, Mario Sunshine.
Yep.
Well, that's
Mario Sunshine.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The ink, but the rest, like, the color palette and stuff like that, it does feel different from their normal stuff.
It is, like, there's a lot of, like, bright pink, bright orange, bright green. Yes.
The character designs are a little bit outside their normal weird.
A little angstier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe almost Sega-ish. Like, maybe kind of...
I was thinking more like a...
Jet Grind kind of looking, maybe.
They're cartoonier.
Yeah,
I was thinking like an old Majesco style kind of character design, but in a good way.
What?
A good way?
I don't even know what that means.
It's fine,
James.
Don't worry about it.
Anyway, the actual gameplay was pretty fun. They had setups where it was four versus four, and then they had two different games going on at once for the public.
That's 16 players going on.
Yeah, the great thing about Splatoon, if you want to play Splatoon, it didn't take that long because there were 16 people playing at any given time. So they churned through the line really fast.
It was about a 5-minute demo.
So you could play with the gyro to help aim, or you could turn it off, I think, by pushing a button on the screen
or something.
Yeah,
it was a plus button, I think.
It was good. It took me a little while to get the tactics. I mean, I'm not good at these kind of games, but we got a hang of it by the end.
The tactics are different in this than shooters.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah. I mean, you're trying to gain territory rather than...
Yeah.
You really... It's not... The objective is not to take out other people.
Right. You want to take out other people because they will prevent you from completing the main objective. So they get in your way or they threaten to slow you down and distract you.
You get points for killing people. And I think that does help with your final score for who wins. Yeah. But the majority of the emphasis on the waiting is on the ground coverage.
How I read it, those points only increase the meter on the side.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. The only thing that factors is who covers the most ground.
Okay.
Yeah. So the idea is that as you paint the ground or you take out opponents, this meter fills up and that lets you get the super weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed in the B-roll for the game during the direct a lot more super weapons than we got to play with. Mm-hmm. They had like a giant paint roller that you could just crush dudes with. They had a sniper rifle. There was another one, I think. All we had was the grenade and the big row of paint that just feels super overpowered right now. But
the grenade wasn't a superpower.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Actually, I didn't know that there was a grenade the first time I played, and that really hindered my ability to do anything.
The grenade's kind of a weird risk-reward thing, because if you use it, you're out of paint.
Pretty much. You use it more than half.
It uses 80% of your paint. Ink.
70%. But yeah, I mean, you can refill pretty quickly. You can refill anywhere just by going down into the paint.
Okay.
It's a weird game to describe with words. I mean, if you watch the video they put out playing it, I mean, that is the game. And we got some good video ourselves playing it.
I thought it was pretty easy to understand as I was playing it.
Yeah, I think seeing it makes a lot more sense.
Right.
But I like that this there is a certain sense of chaos to what's going on that kind of gives, this may sound heretical, but the Smash Brothers kind of chaos where there's just stuff going on around you and you may not have a feel for what's going on and stuff's just kind of happening in front of you and you just...
Well, you could spend time going after the objectives, but then also obstructing other people.
Yeah.
Well, there are a bunch of ways to approach it. I mean, this is just one mode of probably several
in the game.
But that's actually good, though. But that actually speaks to the depth of the game design.
Yeah. This is all just one mode. I mean, when you load it, it says that you're playing...
Yeah.
I don't know what they call it, but basically you're covering the field. Right? Not capture the flag, but sort of kind of a mode.
Right.
And I'm sure there are going to be other modes of play, probably one where it's kills and, use your imagination. But
Well, I know one thing you'll appreciate, John, and one thing you and I have talked about a lot is like spawn points. We discussed this with GoldenEye. So one of the big problems is you spend a lot of your time just trying to run to the action from where you spawn.
Yep.
And then other games will spawn you in like random ass places. Sometimes those always spawn you right in front of a dude who just shoots you immediately.
Well, yeah,
right.
That's the thing. I mean, typically a game that's properly tuned will spawn you away from the action with, okay, that will save you. You won't get killed right away, but you have to run towards the action and find where the action is.
They have a nice solution in Splatoon to that problem. So you do spawn back at your base, usually away from the main fighting.
Unless they've captured your base, basically. Which did happen to me once.
Then you're really screwed. Yeah. But most of the time, you spawn in a safe place, and then you can take different routes. You might be able to go find places that haven't... And you can use the map on the gamepad to find places that haven't been painted yet. So maybe... You don't want to jump back in the action. Maybe you just want to go and explore, paint the territory that hasn't been touched yet, and you can help your team that way. If you want to jump back into the action where people are shooting each other a lot, you can tap on your teammates on the map, and you just jump straight to them.
Right.
That's cool.
So you don't have to do all the running to get back to there. You can just jump right back into the action.
Yeah.
But you're doing it willfully.
Right.
It's not the game saying, oh, don't you want to be right back in the fray? Let's just spawn you. You'll be disoriented.
Yeah.
You'll show up right in front of somebody who's already ready to shoot you. In this case, it's like you're choosing. Like, you looking at the map, you can tell where they are and how hot is the action right there. Is it a safe place? Maybe not. Maybe you jump into it knowing that you might die immediately. But that's your choice.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought that was really smart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that. That's a problem that a lot of shooters have.
Yes.
It's not just unique to this one. And I thought they solved it in a really great way.
And it's easy because you can only pull it off in a more cartoony game like this. I mean, this is sort of realistic.
Because you do it with a super jump.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's very interesting that they're able to do it because they're not going for a realistic view. They can go, it's a squid tower. You can go up and down,
Either it'd be a game like this or something that's like in the future.
Yeah.
Right. It would have to be a teleport.
We can teleport around. You know, it's going to be some cliche.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
but yeah, Splatoon is neat, and you know, I think they talked about it in the digital event video. But the fact that you can see other people's shots, like from around corners and far off, that does affect things. It increases your situational awareness of where the action is and what's going on, who's shooting who.
Yeah.
You can see that stuff from far away. It's not just bullets.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, because the game is about, I mean, it is like kids running around with super soakers, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's this weird, like crazy chaos to it that made me think of like that old Nickelodeon show, Wild and Crazy Kids, you know, where they would just turn like 100 kids loose when they're all like spraying paint at each other, you know? It's like, it does have this kind of wacky, like just things are flying all over the place. It's like paintball, but even crazier.
Yeah, it's like paintball mode in GoldenEye, and then said, let's really do paintball mode in this extreme.
It's not even paintball, it's just like it's you're shooting paint everywhere.
Yeah.
And it is just, it's a really fun, wacky kind of a feel to it that I enjoyed quite a bit.
Yeah.
But like the shooter mechanics hold up. Like it doesn't feel like a kiddie shooter. It doesn't feel like a shooter for people who have no idea what shooters are for. Like it feel like a deep, complex shooter that you need a lot of skill to be good at.
Yeah.
Like it felt like it wasn't a compromise. It was just a smart way to solve some of the problems that are inherent in that genre.
So it's third person.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So now, how does the aiming work? Is there any lock-on stuff or anything like that? Because that's often what the problem is a lot of times with third-person shooters is...
No lock-on, but of course, you basically have tracer shots, right? Because you can see the ink come out of your gun.
You're spraying.
So if your aim is...
Okay.
And you can also...
I always envisioned it as like shooting pellets.
No, you're spraying like a row of paint.
And it's like a Mario Sunshine.
All right, now that makes
sense. You can hold it down and just sweep it across your target.
Okay, that actually sounds even more fun.
Yeah, and it takes a lot... It takes a fair number of hits to kill someone, so you really kind of have to keep it on them. You have to keep spraying them with the paint to kill them. So, like, it gives you a chance to, you know, you miss aim, you overshoot the aim, but then you can correct back to it, and if you hold it down on it for a few seconds, then you'll kill them. So you don't have to be a perfect shot. You're not sniping people.
Yeah.
You know? It solves some of these problems that people have, but it's still skill-based. Like, it's not auto-aim.
Yeah.
You know, you do have to actually point at the people to shoot them.
Yep.
And you have to get good at that. And the better you get at it, the more advantage you have. So I think it will still be very competitive.
So Johnny, do you think that this is going to be a multiplayer-only kind of download title? You think you're going to have a single-player campaign in this? I'll be very curious to see what they do for a single-player campaign in this.
I think the campaign will be maybe more of kind of like a puzzle thing. I think it'll be like infiltration, you know, there'll be some of that. Because the more you paint, the more access you have to places and the more resources you have, because that's how you refill your ammo. So I think there'll be a lot of infiltration. There's this big fort. There's enemies all over it. You need to get in there. You know, you can do some of it stealthily, some of it aggressively, but you need to be smart about finding different routes, going up different surfaces, coordinate. Maybe it's co-op. Maybe it's online co-op and you have to coordinate with somebody else. Like, I think, I know that sounds pretty ambitious for Nintendo, but like they're kind of setting themselves up for that with what we saw at E3.
Yeah, I mean, they have everything in place. They have all the building blocks in place to do something like that, because a lot of that stuff is just using what's already existing, the gameplay that's already existing, just repackaging it.
And in a lot of ways, this paint mechanic has been done in some ways in Portal 2, and that's a single-player game to a large extent. It has a good, great co-op mode also, but it has a great single-player campaign, and you could do a lot of great puzzles with paint mechanics, because once you paint a surface, now you can do things with that surface that you couldn't do before. Really, fundamentally, it's a lot like Portal 2.
Yeah.
And I would love to think that Nintendo has played Portal 2 and is getting ideas from it. Like, that is a dream world that I'm living in, but that would be wonderful. Yeah. So I would love to see them go in that direction. And they could do, you know, single-player modes against bots, but that's not very exciting. Well, I think there will be a campaign.
And there may be other modes in the game that may work better, too. That single-player versus bots work
better. Yeah, you and your buddies team up. I mean, one of the interesting things is, like, you know, we talked a little bit yesterday about whether you have to have a gamepad to play this game. I don't think you do. I think you could play this on a pro controller.
Yeah.
You know, I think you play it on a GameCube controller or whatever. You know, so maybe this is a game that will rely a lot on online if they want you to play with a gamepad. But I think you could do local co-op as well, split screen, whatever. You know, one person on TV, one on the gamepad.
Some of the abilities, though, like the ability to do the jump to person.
I don't think so. You could just have like a push the Z button on the GameCube controller, which is useless.
Bring up a map and select.
But that slows things down quite a bit.
It would be a disadvantage, but, you know.
You could bring it up on a dial or something and just... You know, do something.
Yeah, I feel like there's ways around that.
Yeah.
The gamepad might be the better way to play the game, but it doesn't have to be the only way to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, Splatoon, very promising. I'm very curious to see what else there is to the game. I think the map designs will be very important, because the way you play the game, you're interacting not only with the other players, but with the map very directly. So map designs are going to be important.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see the different kinds of environments that they're going to bring to this, because it will have a big effect on how you play the game.
Sure. I mean, this is
another... We only saw one fairly small map.
Right. This is another game we may not have seen in previous years, that they may have held till next E3.
Right.
Yeah. I also wonder if there's going to be DLC for this. That's kind of my question with a lot of this stuff.
I would say that's...
Map packs are easy to crank up.
I would say that's quite possible. It probably depends on how the game does. If the game doesn't do well, they may not.
But I was impressed that generally people seem really positive on this. You know, for Nintendo to introduce a new IP, some people were just shocked by that period that Nintendo would do that. But like, people seem to like the style of it, the mechanics of it. It's fun to play. It's online, which is just like Nintendo doing a new online game is like attention grabbing.
Yep.
And they set it up in the booth so that a lot of people could play it and enjoy it, and it
visually dominated their booth.
Oh yeah, there were a lot of people that I heard while standing in line for Smash. It was like, oh, what's that game? That game looks really cool,
mm-hmm.
because they would have it, you know, playing in their roll of the big screen.
Yeah.
While they were between Smash matches.
How they had it positioned? They had it in a back corner of the booth. But when I say that, I mean like the whole diagonal of the booth was this sweeping wall with art from the game on it.
And yeah.
It was. Besides Smash Brothers, it was the most visually demanding thing in the booth.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It was definitely the second biggest deal in the booth.
Yeah. It had the biggest sign of anything. Smash mm-hmm. Brothers had a bunch of smaller signs. I mean, they wanted you to be able to see it from outside of their booth, and you could.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's so different from everything that people usually nowadays think Nintendo cranks out, right?
Yeah.
So that immediately draws people in, like, hey, wow, that looks like a shooting game from Nintendo. Let's see what they did with it.
They put out... They announced two new IPs in 1E3.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the other. Let's talk about Codename Steam.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about Codename Steam.
Yeah, what do you guys think about
so,
that?
So, three of us went to the round table.
Yeah.
James, Mr. Strategy, tell us about it.
Yeah. So, spare your fangs and dig in.
Codename Steam, third-person shooter strategy game is how they've been describing it. The idea is that you make tactical decisions based on what you can see from this third-person view, because their idea was that may be a more approachable strategy angle than the strategy games Intelligent Systems has made in the past, things like Fire Emblem and Advance Wars. So they have these characters that are essentially these alien fighting super force created by President Lincoln, and I mean they're just different classes to them. They have different kind of weapons and tactical usability, and the idea is that you control each of them in this turn-based mechanic to essentially attack aliens.
Yeah.
It does appear that the things like accuracy are maintained by how well you aim and fire and stuff
mm-hmm,
like that.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like the weapons they were using at the time were mostly ranged or mostly area of effect weapons, so it's kind of hard to judge all the interfaces you're going to get when you use different weapons.
So they were also just shooting.
Yeah, but a lot of them was that grenade. They did a lot.
But there was one character they showed off, like the lioness.
Yeah.
Where it looked like she pounced on the character that was our attack.
Weird.
So she like moved at the same time she was attacking. It was kind of She really looked like she was pretty different from some.
Yeah.
Of the
so there are apparently class based structures that mean different characters have different value and different ways they can be used. I mean, ultimately, because we didn't get to play it, it's hard to judge, you know, how it works and get a real solid feel for it, even though, you know, the roundtable did give a lot of details. But, I mean, it looks cool. It's also 2015. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how far away from completion did it look? Did it look really early?
I thought it looked very advanced.
Yeah, so. I think visually there's probably a little bit of work left to handle for some clarity stuff, and I think they probably got that feedback after the show. There's some interface stuff that kind of blended in with the background. But mechanically the game looked like it was pretty far along.
And it's complex, you know, like it's a strategy game and there's a lot of systems, there's a lot of mechanics going on that you have to kind of juggle and weigh different options to try to find the best solution. So, I mean, a lot of this stuff with a strategy game, I feel like a lot of this, you kind of need to think through before you even start making the game because you need these things to interact with each other
well. That would be my concern. How seamless is the kind of when you go between the third person shooting and the.
Well, it's seamless in that there's no other mode. You're always in the third person.
Okay. That is explicitly something they intentionally avoided was a map, overhead map.
Yeah.
An overhead. They want you to rely on the different characters in their different locations and what you can see from those. So either you have to remember what you saw previously, or you want to have someone who's like stays at maybe an overlooked kind of point so you can look down and see.
Yeah. Interesting.
You can see what your characters see. And that, I love that. I thought
that's
that was
really
a
cool.
Great choice, and really it sets it apart from a lot of other games that are somewhat similar, like XCOM and Valkyria Chronicles, that do have these maps.
Yeah.
You know, you can see things from a character's point of view, but that's mostly artistic. What you really care about is what are the overall placements. So in this game, you don't know the overall. So they don't have to do things like Fog of War.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's no map.
Yeah.
So the Fog of War is what's between you and the enemy. What obstructions are there? What can you not see? And it encourages you to separate your team, you know, to move them out, to put them in advantageous positions. And sometimes you might have to trade between having a good vantage point and being in a good place to attack, or being in a good, or maybe
ambushing, something like that,
or maybe putting yourself in a spot where you can see the field really well also exposes you and makes you vulnerable to the enemy shots. I love that idea. If they really capitalize on that, it could make this a really special game.
Yeah,
and I thought, you know, it felt like they were putting it felt to me there was something three dimensional about the strategy that these other games sort of. It seems like they would do, but then ultimately they don't.
Right.
And this game seems like it's delivering on the three-dimensionality of
it. The arc that they show of like what your attack will do definitely varies significantly if you walk around and there's like a ledge above you or below you. Definitely
elevation's important, but also just what like obstructions, like looking around corners and things like... A lot of times in strategy games, these are trivial. Yeah. You know, because you can see things from the sort of God's eye point of view.
Right.
Yeah.
I do think Valkyria Chronicles actually gives some sense of that, because they do limit to what your characters can see. You do have this overhead map, but you can't see things on it unless one of your characters can see it.
Yeah. Yeah, they almost act like radars.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, and they have to be, you know, facing the right direction too, so you can get behind people.
Yeah. So right. So it feels like an evolution of that. It feels a little more authentic than.
Yeah, I would say that's probably the closest, simply on that point. You don't have an overhead map to work with. I think if you have played that game and think about not having an overhead map, that's kind of where you are. And I think they talked about how, you know, the individual party members aren't really what's important. It's the whole team. And so there's some elements there that may have additional kind of crossover influence stuff going on. Although they said they weren't influenced, but yeah. I don't believe that for a hot second, since it's one of his favorite games.
Yeah.
I'm a little worried it might be too difficult for some people. I mean, I've played strategy games before, but I'm not sure I'm going to be able to remember some of the stuff. I'll be curious to see how they aid players maybe aren't as good at maintaining situational awareness of...
Well,
maybe you'll learn over time if they design the levels well.
Like, how quickly can you switch between characters? Is it trivial to just keep going back and forth?
It seems like it was.
Like it's hard to say definitively because we couldn't play it.
Yeah, we don't understand how the turn ends and what it takes to... They talked some about it, but it was hard to really get a feel for...
Oh, it was information overload also.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really hard to keep up with all the stuff they were saying.
Yeah, because while she was playing it, they were talking about...
Exactly.
Completely other things.
Like, I was trying to follow the live blog on the site, and I can't imagine.
So I'm sorry. I tried my best.
Way too much. No, it was good because it was actually, because I was writing a news story as I'm watching it go, like, all the everything scroll, and I was like, I have to cut this news story off because there's just too much information here.
Yeah.
This is more preview territory than just news story territory. So.
It was unusually dense, and it also, like, sort of exacerbated by the fact that one of the developers on stage spoke English.
Right.
So, and sometimes there was a translation delay, and sometimes there wasn't.
Yeah. And sometimes there was weird disagreements.
Right. They would talk amongst themselves a little bit. So, yeah, the pace at which they were feeding information to us was kind of speeding up and slowing down. It was a very difficult event to cover.
And I would say that they were unusually loquacious for one of their roundtables.
Right. Yes. One thing I actually kind of respected and adored about this particular roundtable, and it's really set it apart from a lot of other ones, is that they dove deep on the gameplay design right off the bat.
Right.
Because, like, they talked about the art design and the music and the story and all the stuff that you would expect them to. Yeah. It's a new IP, so there's a lot to cover. But because it's a strategy game, they got real hardcore on the strategy of it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Why do we do
here
things
here are some
this
tactics
way?
And things.
Yeah, here are the kinds of decisions you need to make. And here are all the different resources you have to
They also had a Q&A where people were asking really good questions, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Stuff like permadeath is like, that's a great question.
It was awesome in that sense.
But in terms of difficulty, I mean, I know the guy said that he thinks it's quite a difficult game. By Nintendo standards, that may be true.
Right.
My guess is that, you know, the way they're balancing the medals with, you know, being able to restore people in the middle of the battle versus being able to buy things in the shop after the battle.
Yeah.
That's a resource that you want to manage. And so it encourages you to almost make the game more difficult on yourself because there will be a reward down the line. That's a very Nintendo way to handle these things. And that makes me think that they will tend to skew the difficulty on the easier side because there are ways for you to make it more difficult and more rewarding if that's how you choose to play.
They'll probably have some sort of ranking system too for how well you're
there. You, that makes sense.
And they can award medals for doing well.
I mean, I came out of this thing thinking that's like probably going to be my favorite 3DS game next year. Like, I'm super excited. Yeah. I love strategy games. I think it's an awesome twist that they're bringing to it.
Yeah.
I really like the art style. And I think the engine was really impressive to me. Like the way that game, it's a third person shooter strategy game. There's nothing that looks like it on 3DS. And it's very three dimensional. Like, you have to swivel the camera around these characters. The frame rate held up really nicely.
Yep.
There's a lot of detail in the environments that's necessary for you to understand where you are and where they're talking about using the art design to help people get their bearings and to understand how far away things are. And
the 3D effect will probably help that too.
I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will. We didn't get to see that, but we didn't actually see this running on 3DS. It was all being output to a projection screen. But I thought, you know, that looks like a great use of the system, of what the system can do, even the touchscreen. I thought being able to swivel the camera around on the touchscreen is a good thing. And because it's turn-based, you don't have to have the pressure of, like, being able, you know, it's not like Kid Icarus where you're trying to do this, like, frantically trying to spin the camera around. Oh, God, something's hitting me, but I can't see what it is. Yeah. That's not going to happen in this game, right? So it's more about just giving you a lot of control and letting you, at your own pace, look around, see what's going on, and make decisions. I thought it was awesome. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, I got the impression it was pretty far along in terms of the core mechanics and engine. And kind of like Xenoblade, they could have had a demo on the floor. They chose not to because people wouldn't get it in 5 minutes. And it wouldn't demo well. Yep. So they chose to instead just do longer video features or cable features.
Could be out in the early part of next year, I would say. I mean, based on what we saw, it was very impressive.
I think it depends on how long they plan for this to be, how many of the levels they've designed, the scenarios.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I could see them also opting and say, well, we'll just show it next E3.
Yeah,
and
could be.
It being there next year.
Yeah, maybe it could come out soon after.
I mean, they've shown Fire Emblem at E3s before, and they've never demoed that well. So I'm not surprised if they're saying, maybe we won't do a traditional demo.
Maybe not a good E3 game.
Yeah. And they managed the hype for that real well, too, as we were able to see on our end.
Yeah.
They were spending weeks saying, hey, we have a 3DS game that we're not going to talk about until our roundtable.
It's a secret to everybody.
It really sort of drove that thing to 11. So,
yep.
It was good for them. There's a Treehouse demo of it that they did the next day on yesterday.
I'm thinking it was probably very similar to what we saw because the roundtable we were at was not streamed. And so I think it was probably a lot of the same information and the same. I'm sure it was the same levels.
We haven't seen it, so but I mean, it's very informative if you want to go see it.
Sure. Yeah, I'm sure it is. All those Treehouse demos, they did a nice job. I mean, I just on the subject of Nintendo's, you know, new experiment in live stream, which is a huge success for them. It's very popular on Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
They put 20-something hours worth of content together, which is no small feat at all. I mean, that's a lot of work that went
during
into that.
E3.
On the floor, I mean, we walked up and watched a lot of it, you know, in person, just from right behind the camera, like literally 2 feet behind the camera. Yep. We're standing there watching all this happen.
Watching Kid Ellis.
Yeah. We saw some of the same stuff that you did at home. I thought they did a fantastic job with that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I saw some stuff on Twitter like, you know, well, Nintendo's just showing that they can do this better than everybody else. And I'm like, hold up. We would love to do this kind of content.
Yeah.
We're not allowed to. Right. We don't have the level of access that they do. We don't have the demos in hand.
Yeah.
We don't have the translators to talk to these developers. We're not allowed to talk to these developers. Yeah. We can't get Reggie up on stage. I wish we could, you know? So, yes, they can provide a different scale and a different level of content than we can, but that's their choice.
Yes.
That's because Nintendo has chosen to retain that basically they've decided to give themselves all the best exclusives.
Yeah, and they also don't have to answer tough questions either.
Exactly. That's absolutely true. And believe me, we've tried to ask them tough questions.
Yes. Yep.
And they usually either don't answer, or if they answer, they answer the worst possible way. You know, and that's, it's very frustrating for us because we want to bring this kind of coverage to our listeners and our readers as well.
Yep.
And you know, if we're not going to get to do it, I'm glad Nintendo is doing as good a job as they have, and I'm not trying to take away from how well
this was produced. Because they did a really good job.
They could have done this really poorly. And, yeah. and they did it very well, okay? And I give them all the kudos for that. But that does not mean that it entitles them to do it for the rest of time. That it doesn't mean that this is the ideal scenario.
Yeah.
I think having independent voices, having a critical eye, having fresh thoughts, just fresh thoughts and fresh perspectives on this stuff would be very valuable for all the people who are interested in this content. And it's too bad that they don't give us a similar level of access that they give themselves. Mm-hmm. Because I would love for them to do what they do and for us to also get to do our version of it and to let people at home decide which one is better. Yeah. And unfortunately, people don't have that choice.
Yeah.
I'm glad that the only option you have is a good one, but I still would prefer for there to be multiple options. And we do the best that we can with the relatively poor level of access that Nintendo affords us, and there's not much we can do about that.
Nope.
Yeah.
But we do the best we can.
Yeah, they definitely keep the press at arm's length.
Yeah.
More than arm's length.
More than arm's length. Yeah. They're holding umbrellas and they're poking
yeah.
at us.
Yeah, so...
Yeah. Yeah. So, why don't we move on and finish up with a couple of stories to wrap up this podcast. You guys, I have a really good one I want to end on.
Okay.
So, if you guys have any, like, good stories from the week, things that happened on the floor. And one thing James and I can discuss a little bit is running into RFN listeners.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk about that?
Sure. So, 3-4 occasions, I guess?
At least.
People came up to Johnny, myself, or both of us, and introduced themselves as people who listen to the show, which is amazing.
I loved it.
And these are completely random encounters on the show floor.
Yeah.
This is, I mean, in the past, of course, you know, I've ran into RFN fans, but it's been at panels,
right?
Places where you expect them to congregate.
They're coming to look. They're coming to meet us.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
This isn't. I mean, this isn't even like when I got hunted at the Ace Combat demo station. I mean, this was like standing in line to play Splatoon again. I mean, this or watching people play Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
Playing right after playing one of Miyamoto's little project games.
So you're captive, pretty much.
Yeah. The
box hunter is being hunted. Is what you're saying.
They found your box.
How ironic!
They found your box, James.
No. Hunting boxes. They use the box as bait.
You're the most dangerous game, is James Jones. this was odd because, of course, E3 isn't like the general public. These are people who are in the industry in some way. A couple of the guys actually who told us they were RFN listeners worked for these game companies and said they were big fans. And my favorite was the trend. This happened at least twice of people who said, I'm a big fan, look. And they pulled out their phone and showed us their podcast app, and they showed that they are subscribed. It's like, I believed you when you told me, but, you know, it's awesome.
It's really weird. Like it packs...
One person wanted a photo with this, which was, as radio people, I think is hilarious. Yeah, that you would want a photo with people who you listen to only their voice.
Yeah.
It was
charming.
It was really awesome and weird and just like unexpected.
And my favorite was when we were watching the Xenoblade thing. We were in the front row at the Treehouse demo, and someone standing next to us like leaned over and said, "Hey, I heard you guys talking. I recognize your voice. I listen every week.
You're not safe anywhere. You can't even talk now."
It's an odd feeling
to be
recognized, especially at a place like E3 where you feel like you're among peers, really.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of other media people. Mostly at E3, I'm running around trying to, like, ingratiate myself with my heroes, you know?
Yeah,
dude, I love what you guys do. I want to meet you. I want to be on your show, whatever. And it's weird when people do it to us.
Yeah.
But I love it, and I don't want to discourage it because it's very charming and adorable.
It was very flattering.
It's a trip, though. It's weird.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Because in no way, I mean, you know, we do this podcast week after week, and in no way do we feel we're some sort of celebrity or we do this because of all the times that we've gone to, you know, things like E3, geeking out to all of these people that, you know, we love the work they do.
And James kept talking about how it's weird to even know that people listen because, I mean, we hear from people, but to meet people in person is like, it makes it a lot more real. you know, and what we do, I mean, right now we're in a room, we can at least talk to each other and look at each other, but most of the time, like, I'm staring at the wall
when we do RFS. I mean, this is weird in and of itself. We're sitting around a box with a microphone on it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but normally, like, we're all in our little corners of the world, and like, it, like, gets magically spliced together through a lot of hard work.
And all the interaction to what we do is, it's on a forum, or it's in a comment thread or something.
You get words saying, hey, I love the show, and that's amazing. But it's very different when someone, like, walks up to you and wants to shake your hand or get a photo with you. It's like, wow, you really do listen to the show. It's
what I do is actually real.
It's hard to believe sometimes, but that was wonderful. And again, like at PAX East, it's less surprising.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, some people go to PAX East expecting to see us there.
Yeah.
E3 is like, I'm working there. Like, it's different.
Yeah.
You know, it's a different context. And so, it's just a bigger surprise. It's not that it's unwelcome, but it's just like, I wouldn't expect it at E3. It really caught me off guard. Every time it happened, I was like, really? It's just like, I wasn't.
Are you sure you have the right guy?
I wasn't expecting this to happen today, you know? So that was really pretty crazy for us.
The A-Train? The A-Train story? Are we okay with that one?
Sure.
All right. Yeah, so Natsume, we spoke a little bit about how they've had to sort of salvage the Harvest Moon branding because Marvelous AQL just took that game and said, we're going to give this to our own people. And amongst the other actions they've done is they've picked up some hyper-Japanese video games, like games that are so Japanese that they have no sense bringing them to the U.S. And one of them is A-Train, which is a game where you run a railway on 3DS in Tokyo in the 60s. And we went over to do our Natsume booth appointment, and we saw their new Harvest Moon, and we had this long, incredibly in-depth conversation about Harvest Moon that I was way out of my depth on. But Becky was locked in, so that's fine. I just sat there and went, great. Yes. All the new crops are here. That's wonderful. And then as it was wrapping up, I just asked, do you have anything else? Like, do you want to see A-Train? And I'm like, yeah, I want to see A-Train. So we're led over to the back corner of their booth, which if you've ever seen, you can see pictures of their booth online. It's a giant barn. And then these huge plush animals, like a cow and a horse pulling a cart and just chicks. And it's ridiculous. And there's this dude kind of standing next to a picnic table behind their giant fake barn. And he's just standing there looking out into the booth. And she goes, these guys want to see A-Train.
Oh, my God.
So he goes,
I see you selected Demolition Man.
Yeah.
It was one of those moments, right?
So he looks at us, pulls a 3DS out of his pocket, and flips it open.
Never a good sign.
Then flips it open.
It's like, hey, the first hit is free, kid.
And goes, so this is A-Train. And he goes, actually, let's go over here. And then he sits down at a picnic table inside the E3 press hall and plays this incredibly Japanese train placement simulator where his lead-off story is, so this game starts in the 1960s outside Tokyo where they're rebuilding. And this is your assistant. Her outfit changes with the decades. I was like, done. Demo over. We're finished here. It was just, I love going to that booth every year. It's amazing every time.
You never know what's going to happen, that's for sure. So, yeah, it's not even like Denshi de Go or one of the established train franchises in Japan that they're bringing, for some reason, to America.
It's like a Sim City kind of game, but just the train part.
Yeah.
But, right. Like, you have to make sure that you have enough tracks on each side of the road. It's like, oh, my God.
Oh, man. All right. Wow. So, I've got one more story to finish off, unless you have one, Mike, to think of.
Only the sign, our favorite sign across the street from the Okonomiyaki dinner place.
Yeah.
So there's a sign that across the street from one of the Japanese restaurants we like to go to when we have a crew down in the area. And over the years, it seems like it's morphed and gotten even more and more crazy.
Add more things to it.
So I'm just going from memory here. They got one of those signs in the strip mall that lists, you know, 20 things in there, right? Yeah. So one of them is water. There's a water store. Got a baseball card store.
Yep.
Mind you, this is 2014.
Yeah.
They had Beanie Babies.
Oh, mind you, this is 2014.
Yeah.
What else was there?
Batteries. I think it was one of those.
There's a battery. Batteries.
Water and batteries.
I think phones was in there. Yeah, it was
like
it,
welcome to apocalypse variety. We have your baseball bats, your shotguns, your batteries, your Beanie Babies in case you need something to occupy your time during the zombie apocalypse.
So like I said, it changes a little bit every year that I go there, but it's always always a pleasure.
Yeah, it's that place pretty much is where amazing. You go in case you think an earthquake is coming, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, well, the last story from E3 this year. I think maybe we'll save for a future show my trips over to the PlayStation and Microsoft booths. There, I saw some interesting stuff over there that was heavily inspired by classic Nintendo games, and I could talk about a number of those that I think people might be interested in. Actually, a couple of them are actually, I think, coming to Wii U or 3DS eventually, but they weren't actually shown on those platforms. Actually, there's a whole other conversation we could have about the lack of indie stuff in Nintendo's booth this year, which I thought was really a shame, because it's become, in Sony's booth especially, it's like half the booth is indie games, and there's some amazing stuff they're showing.
Yeah, it was a huge part of the presentation, too.
Yeah, and it should be, because it's a big part of the library. You know, like these big games get delayed, and they don't come out, you know. A lot of these publishers are cutting down on the portfolio of games that they're releasing. Mm-hmm. So the indie games really do fill that in. And if you make a big deal about it, there's a potential for those to be big sellers and to really mean a lot to the people who own the platforms. And as somebody who owns a PlayStation and all the PlayStations lately, I play a lot of those games and I really enjoy them. And I'm glad to spend $15 on an indie game if I think it's going to be really good.
Yep.
So, and that benefits Sony. So, I wish Nintendo was taking a similar stance on it, because they could, but they don't. And that's dumb. And maybe next year they'll get a little wiser on that. But, I did go over there and play a whole bunch of stuff. One of the things I played, I didn't even know this was going to be at E3. I've heard of this game before, called Axiom Verge. Does this ring a bell, John?
No.
This is an indie game made by one person. His name's Tom Sapp, I believe. I got his business card. I'm going to try to follow up with him. I might even try to get him on the show. He's a very interesting guy. He is making everything in this game by himself, from the music to the art to the game design, all of it. He's been working on it for years and years. It's finally coming out next spring. It's called Axiom Verge, and it is a 2D Metroid game. And when I say that, I mean you look at it, it looks like Metroid. It really does. It's all the crazy alien stuff, the art style of it, it's very much so. You listen to the music, it's really cool music, very Metroid inspired, very sci-fi music, plays almost exactly like Metroid. It's different items, different level layouts and everything, but this guy loves Metroid, okay? Yeah. You look at this, you're like, this guy has played a ton of Metroid and is obsessed with it, and he wants to make his own Metroid game, and I played it. I'd say he's doing a damn fine job. Like, this game plays great, and it has it seems very thoughtfully laid out. The power-ups are really cool. The weapons are great. The art design, I thought, was just fantastic. And it really does look like somewhat better than an NES Metroid game, you know, but very similar to that. I think anybody who loves classic Metroid is going to be really interested in this.
So it's going for that 8-bit style.
Yeah, pretty much. And it just seems like he's doing a bang-up job on it. Like, I played it for like 20 minutes. I was so into it. I wanted to play more. Well, I was over there playing it, talking to the guy. Found out, yes, he is the guy making the game. The one guy, right?
Yeah.
So we're playing it. We're talking about it a little bit. He was telling me about, Jeremy Parrish's articles on the anatomy of Metroid and all the, you know, Jeremy basically coined the term Metroidvania. He's written very extensively about the game design principles, and, you know, Tom seemed very interested in that stuff. We're having this conversation, and I'm playing the game. Or I'm waiting for my turn to play the game, I believe, at this point. And I see a guy from a Nintendo Treehouse walk over, JC Rodrigo, who actually was sort of organizing the Smash Brothers tournament. We've seen him for years and years.
Yeah. Yep, name rings a bell.
He's around a lot, and a really nice guy, and we talked to him a couple times over the week. But I walked up, and I was like, oh, hey, man. And I looked right behind him, and Reggie's there. And I immediately figured out that JC is, like, giving Reggie a booth tour. right? He's taking him around the show to go look at some other things.
Yeah.
And I wonder if even maybe JC had maybe scoped out a few things he thought Reggie might be interested in, and maybe that's why they were up at this particular game. Sure. Because we've heard that Reggie is a Metroid fan, right? Anyway, Tom, the guy who makes Axiom Verge, and he on Twitter, he is at Axiom Verge. He said at this point, it's basically his identity. Like, that's almost his name at this point.
You delete the game, you kill me.
Oh, you can imagine, like, this is his life for, like, the past 5 years.
This is, like, his cave story.
Yeah. Right. Like, he's obsessed with making this game.
Yeah.
And so it really has kind of overtaken his identity. Well, Tom is speechless. Like, I look at him, and he is so excited to meet Reggie. He can't even meet Reggie. Like, he can't even talk to him. He's so excited. He's, like, breathless. Not even speechless, but, like, he can't even breathe. He's hyperventilating.
Yeah.
And, of course, I've met Reggie. Like, I had actually been pretty close to him earlier in the day when we were up in the VIP area. So, like, I get pretty starstruck by a lot of people, including Reggie, but I can be in his presence without losing my shit. Right?
Yeah.
So I think, well, this is a great opportunity for me to, like, try to introduce them or something, you know?
Yeah.
And so while I'm thinking, like, maybe I should make an introduction or something, right? Because the other thing I'm thinking is, I'm so lucky to be here to witness this, because this is an adorable moment.
The timing is impeccable.
Oh, yeah. It's so fantastic. But while this is all, this very fast, this is all happening, you know, and I'm thinking, this is a great moment to see this guy. He can't believe Reggie is standing right there. Reggie looks at the screen and says, "Hey, that looks like Metroid." Which, like, couldn't be more obvious, right? Yeah. But he's totally right. I mean, it really does.
Yeah.
And Tom just he doesn't know what to say. Like, he can't respond.
He was totally unprepared, like, for it.
Absolutely. Yes.
Like, you would think that he's
like, "I can't believe you're here."
It's like, you would know? Think that he would probably, in his mind, he would want some kind of rehearsed pitch. Like, right, "Hey, Reggie, right. This is what it's all about. This is who I am."
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
He doesn't know how to respond. So there's, like, this pause. It's like this unbearable, like, silence.
"Hey, Reggie, you like stuff?"
So I do what I do, and I have to jump in and say something.
Yeah.
And you know, the last thing Reggie said was, "Hey, that looks like Metroid." And so I say, "Well, somebody's got to make it. It might as well be this guy." and Reggie goes, "Oh," like, he's like, "Good one," you know. He seemed to get a kick out of it, and then they shook hands, and I think JC said, "Hey, you're gonna be sending us royalties on this." that's a really good line. But then basically they walked away. Like, it was a really brief thing. You know, I'm sure Reggie's going to, like, look at things, like, very briefly. Like, he's busy, and, you know, he's good, going out to see a bunch of stuff. And also, if he stops in one place for too long, a crowd will form.
Yeah. Oh,
and
absolutely.
That's not what he wants, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're trying to stay on the move. But he did get to see it. He got to meet the guy. The guy got to meet Reggie, which I'm sure it was a big deal for him.
Yeah.
And I got to be there to see it all, and I got to kind of throw in a zinger too. So.
That is
so
awesome.
That was my favorite story from E3, and it was pure coincidence. I was just in the right place at the right
time.
Well,
it's perfect. And you said the right thing at the right time too. Yeah. How many times would that happen and you just be like, "Oh, I should have said this."
Yeah.
Many
times have I thought, "Oh man, you know what I should have said?" Yeah. In this case, I said exactly what I wanted to say. So, and I kind of saved it from being even more awkward than it was. I don't even feel bad about sort of usurping his big moment, but it was really funny, and I was really happy that it happened, and then it happened that way. So that was my favorite story from E3 this year, and I think that's going to wrap up our podcast. So thanks everybody for listening. Thank you guys for making this happen.
It took a couple
of days to kind of set it up, and I'm so glad we got to be here and do this in person, and turns out we had plenty to talk about.
Surprise,
surprise.
Really. E3 is such a huge, like, overwhelmingly dense experience that, you know, you just all these, you know, writing and doing these little 10-minute videos, you can't get out all your thoughts, and there's still a lot more we could talk about.
But it's a 5-day trip to another planet, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean,
really, that's a good way of putting it.
You live on another world for 5 days, and then it ceases to exist.
That's a really good description.
And you have to come back and reacclimate yourself to this world that no longer exists.
Yeah. Well, I'm still kind of in fantasy mode right now, because we're still basically only talking about games, and I'm hanging out with game people, and tomorrow when I go home is where, like, the weird...
On Monday, Johnny.
Yeah. I'm going to get home and do laundry, and it's going to be like,
The other thing is, like, time dilates so much when you're here, because, like, your days are packed. There's just no routine. Like, everything is crazy from start to finish, and you're hanging out with all these people that you hardly ever see in
different
person.
Different time zone.
You're playing these games you play 30 games a day in 10-minute chunks. Like, how do you even process all of that, right? So... you get home and you've been gone a week and it feels like a month.
Yes.
It feels like everything is...
Stuff that I know happened on Monday feels like it had to be much, much further off than that.
Yeah. These are long days and they're action-packed. So, anyway, that's... I hope people listening got a sense of what it's like to be at E3 from some of us and enjoyed our conversations. But, of course, if you haven't already heard it, you gotta listen to the E3 Home Team episode.
Which we have to listen to because we haven't heard it.
I'm very excited to hear it. So that's with John and Guillaume and Greg. So, you get two big episodes this week, and we'll be back next week with another one.
Yes, we will.
It never stops. The train just keeps on rolling.
The A-train keeps
on rolling. That's right, the A-train.
That's right.
But our outfits change with the decades.
Yep. So, and of course...
We're getting there.
Mine do.
Of course, you should also be listening to NWR Connectivity. They did a home team reaction show earlier in the week to the digital event, and I think they even had another follow-up episode. I don't know exactly what's on that. I haven't heard any of it yet.
Just happened spontaneously appear on the website.
A wild podcast appears.
Look, I'm a pretty voracious podcast listener, and I'm so far behind. I've got like 40 episodes to catch up on. All the Giant Bomb stuff is... It's going to take a long time to listen to all this stuff. Yeah. So, but we're making the pile a little bit higher. So I hope everyone enjoyed it. And if you have any questions about E3, there's plenty of time to talk about it next week. You can send those emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com and we'll try to answer a bunch of them.
Yeah,
we will.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Are you going to start the segment off? Or?
No, you're going to do it right now.
Yes,
do it.
Yes, I'll host.